Good evening, everyone out there in Morro Bay. Welcome to the meeting of the Public Works Advisory Board. Again, we have a lot of folks in the audience, and we have important things to talk about. So we have a quorum, and I would like to first welcome our new member, Chris Parker. Chris, welcome. So we have our full complement. I will start with a moment of silence. Do we have any announcements? None? No. Okay. Any presentations? We don't. It'll be later.
We do have a presentation tonight. Inadvertently got left off the agenda.
Okay.
And it's a presentation by Elizabeth Cavanaugh from the county on the Morro Bay to Cayucas connector.
Ah.
So, informational item. Please ask Elizabeth any questions, any comments you might have, but we're really not going to discuss this item.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Hi there. Thank you for your time. I'm Elizabeth Cavanaugh. I work for County Parks and Recreation, and I'm here to talk to you about the Morro Bay to Cayucas Connector, which is a project we've been working on for quite a while. And let me make sure I can work that here. What am I doing wrong? Help. So this is a multi-use trail that we're planning that will connect the communities of Morro Bay and Cayucas. Sorry about that.
Just go ahead and say next slide.
Okay. Next slide. So this is part of the California Coastal Trail, which your Harbor Walk Trail that is recently completed and being expanded is part of this. It's a 1,200-mile trail that is being implemented in pieces. It's going to one day reach Oregon and Mexico, so that's a really big goal. Next slide. So here is our trail alignment, and it's really busy, so I want to just kind of walk you through it. We're starting at on the bottom slide there, starting at Cloisters Park, which is on the right side there. The blue line is suggesting that this trail is starting at Cloisters Park. There's already an amazing trail system there, and we're not planning on messing with that. We're using that just to show the connectivity that this trail really has. It will wind through to Beachcomber Drive and Sandalwood, and that at that point it will be using your existing on-road trail, not trail, but bike paths there. Moving upwards on to Yerba Buena, where you have existing bike paths, and then on Toro Lane, that's where the actual new construction of this trail will start. Right now we're showing that this trail is on Caltrans right-of-way on Toro Lane, and we'll talk about that a little later, because that's part of the reason why I'm here, is to talk about Toro Lane. Moving north along North Point Natural Area, we'll be using the Remnant Road that's there, if you're familiar with that area, as our bike path. And then really moving forward onto Chevron, our Dog Beach property, we'll be on the riprap that is right north of North Point. And then on to the pier, we're going up onto the upper picture here where you see the sign segment 3. There's Chevron's pier there. We'll be on that pier, a bridge past Toro Creek, and then from that point on will be a trail on the sand dunes where we will let out onto Studio Drive in Cayucas, which is already an on-road Class 2 bike path. On Cayucas, you're staying along Studio Drive until you hit Old Creek, where you can divide and go. If you stay west, you can have a nice day at 24th Street Beach there, or head to the east side along Ocean Boulevard into Cayucas' bike trails, bike paths that they have existing. Next slide. So the green on this map, which is the exact same map I just showed you, is the existing bike paths or bike trails that both Morro Bay and Cayucas have. So this really shows that this project, the connector, is really filling the gap between the two communities. It's going to be a lovely experience riding along the ocean. Next slide. So this is the Toro Creek area, and this is part of the reason why I wanted to come to you folks. This is, oh, is there a pointer on here? There we go. Okay. So the blue line here is showing what we were originally proposing, and that was in Caltrans right away. If you're familiar with this area, there's a retaining wall, and then there's a chain link fence there. And so the original plan was to build it along that retaining wall. We had some recent meetings with the city of Morro Bay, and they felt that for safety and for visual reasons, they would prefer it along Toro Lane. And so we were happy to accommodate that. We think that makes the project better. But in addition, we wanted to add some additional parking because we heard that parking here is pretty impacted. Mr. Livick suggested that there was an opportunity there for some additional parking in the right-of-way. We thought that was a great idea, so we're going to include that in our project if your advisory council and your city council thinks that that's we should do so. Wrong way. Okay. So the yellow blobs on this map here are showing you the parking opportunities along the trail alignment. We have about 200 parking spots. Those are off-street parking. So we don't see parking being a concern, although we are glad to add those 9 spots because we do think the North Point area is impacted. I think that's... the counties, we have been committed to this a collaborative process with this project. We're involving the city and the community of Cayucas and Chevron, and there's lots of players in this project. So I'm here just part of that continuing discussion of this collaborative process in this project. So I'm here, and I will be talking to all these other players and have for the most part. For the most part, they're supportive of this project. So I just heard that we're not to discuss this project. Is that true?
The board can't take any action on this being a presentation. So,
I would like to, and if I'm out of boundaries, please let me know, have any comments that you may have, any suggestions that I can take back and bring to my engineers and incorporate them or at least look at them as a potential change to this project while that we're in the moving parts of designing this project.
Individual member comments are fine. Just really no discussion.
Does anybody have comments? Jan?
Just a clarification. So it's going to go along Toro Lane and beyond the parking lot up at North Point. It's going to continue on the dunes? Between the dunes and the road?
Yes. So once we get here along this remnant road, and I'm sorry I don't have a close-up of that area, there's the riprap area, which is the big boulders. We'll be peering around those boulders and then past the pier, the kind of platform that's out there on Dog Beach. Once we get past that, that's when we'll start being on the sand dunes. There isn't any sand dunes south of that.
It's just sort of a wide area and then down the hill to the beach, isn't it?
Yeah, it's an engineering, not challenge, but it is a tricky little engineering feat to be able to build it in that one area between the North Point Natural Area and the pier landing area, that platform out there. But it is manageable. We do have engineering plans working in the works right now, and that seems to be something we can do.
Thank you.
Yeah, I have two questions, basically. The part leaving down Toro Lane going to Cayucas, is it going to be purely a Class 1 bikeway, or is it a multi-use trail where there's actually pedestrian access also?
Well, it will be both.
It will be both.
Yeah.
What are you looking at as a width for the you know, once you leave the streets and you're no longer in the Class 2 type bike paths and now you're into this Class 1, what are you looking at as price width section?
Between the actual travel lanes will be between 8 and 12 feet, so they'll be combined. So there'll be 2 4-6 feet lanes. I generally prefer the wider. I think this will be a well-used trail. Similar to Bob Jones, I think we'll have lots of strollers and bicyclists and dogs, and so I'm preferring the wider.
I'm glad you said that, because I was hoping it was a multi-use trail, both pedestrian and bikeway. But I also notice in Morro Bay, especially down near the Embarcadero, a lot of people walk their dogs on the bike path and vice versa.
Yeah.
They kind of cross over whatever they want to use as they go through there. So when you have the added width, it does make it easier for that purpose. Thank you.
You bet.
David.
I got a question. Rob? Question for Rob. I'm just curious, on Toro Lane, how is that handled? Is that a HOA's street, but the city has an easement over, or does that interfere with this?
The city has a public pedestrian and vehicle access easement.
Okay.
To
so that
the
would just be classified as,
yeah,
that. Okay. And then is the other orange parcel, is that where you're presuming to for parking?
That's extra right-of-way. When we were looking at probably a year ago, we were looking at a partial abandonment of Toro Lane. We looked at parking there in that area as one of the options when we did do the abandonment. That would be that same area.
Okay.
I've been on the Bob Jones Trail several times, and you're right about the strollers and the young ladies out there with strollers and babies and so on. It'd sure be nice to have some direction. It's on. You okay?
I can hear you.
Okay. It'd be nice to have some walk left and ride right, or some kind of an indication out there so that we can not crash into that. And I'm from a different area, and where we were at, it was set up that way. So everybody kind of knows it. And I remember coming around the corner on the Bob Jones, right there where the little restaurant is on the right-hand side, mm-hmm, by the golf course. There was a lady, two of them right there with strollers, and I was riding probably faster than I should have been, and but it was a little contentious for a little bit, so
yeah,
that would be a pretty good idea with that.
Well, thank you for that comment. We'll consider that. We do have signs associated, you know, various signs associated with this project that aren't worked out yet, but a simple sign may solve that problem. Or not solve it, but at least forewarn of it.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Just have a question for Rob. Are we going to be addressing this at some point? Is there any action that...
There's no action at this point. It'll move forward to City Council for their action on the decision on the right-of-way issues.
Okay, thanks. What's the timeline on this?
We're currently in our engineering and environmental phase. We're anticipating being done with that mid next year. And then we build trails. There's no fund for trails. That's part of our problem. So once we're done with that phase, then I'll be out writing grants trying to find money to build this. So I can't really tell you. It just depends on whether I'm successful at writing grants or not. I'm hopeful that in 5 years we'll start construction, but that's a guess.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you for your time.
Okay. The next item on our agenda is to elect officers. We are currently without a chair or a vice chair, so we will start by opening up nominations for chairperson.
I move to make Marlis McPherson the chairman of the board.
I second that.
Are there any other nominations? Okay, then all in favor?
Aye.
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 Okay, opposed? Okay, well.
It's unanimous.
Yeah. Nominations for vice chair are now open. I nominate Stephen Shively.
I'll second that.
All right. It's been moved and seconded that Stephen become the vice chair. All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Okay. All right. Next, we have public comment on any items that are not on our agenda tonight. So is there anybody from the public here that wants to comment on something not on the agenda? Oh, please come forward. State your name.
Hello, Roman Salvador. Live at 255 Dunes, number 6.
Rose Morrison, the owner of 255 Dunes.
And it's about the sewer bill for the apartment complex. And I guess
last few years, I noticed the water bill for 6 units is like $38. But we do have a sewer bill for $270-something a month for last few years. And I talked to the tenants. We have 85 years old and 82 years old and 76 years old, single person. And him, all 6 units are single person living in the unit. And just like from the usage of the water bill, you can see, I talked to the lady where I pay the bill every month, and she said that's minimum charge for 7 units for that apartment. We only have 1 water meter, but somehow we got charged for six sewer bill for last few years. So I was hoping if, actually I think they need to get award. Like family of mine, 5 of us, we used to live in Kabira House place in Morro Bay, and we used like $100, but 6 of them only $38 water, but because last year I made them to share the cost of the water and the sewer, so I was hoping fair is fair because they don't use that much water and the sewer doesn't take that much to process their water. Only comes in, comes out. Only $38 worth comes in and $38 worth water comes out. I understand we need to raise money to possibly build a new sewer plant. I just felt everybody should share the cost. Like you use more, you have to pay more. That's just my opinion, and I was hoping the sewer bill could lower it for them.
Okay. Thank you. We are going to be discussing the new rate plan, and I think that this is an issue that is addressed in that. Is that correct, Rob?
We'll talk about how multifamily is charged, but the way they were charged is the way the rates are currently adopted by City Council. So. Right. They were charged correctly, although perhaps it's maybe disproportionate to the water use. And but it is a correct charge based on council adopted rates.
Okay.
Can I ask a quick question?
Yes.
I assume you charge each one of these people their own rental cost. For the place itself.
Only starting from last year.
You did what?
Only last year, because we've been paying for all the years. Only we starting charge back the tenant, because I heard the...
But you're treating them as individual units. And what I'm hearing from Rob, I tend to agree with him based on the fact if you're treating them as separate units, they'd be charged accordingly as their own unit, be it a one-bedroom apartment kind of situation.
Actually, there's 2 condos. It's like a studio that's not one bedroom. It's like one room, including the kitchen, living room, everything, just only one room.
So what you're saying is it's like a duplex more, and there's 3 people in each part of the duplex? Is that what I'm kind of hearing?
No, it's...
No, studio, separate, but we only have 1 meter.
No, it's not a meter cost when you talk on the sewer rate side of it, mm-hmm. That's why. I'm tending to agree with what Rob's saying based on what I'm understanding is the situation out there. You're probably being charged correctly based on the way the ordinance is set up. I'm just throwing that out there. I wasn't exactly sure how your whole situation worked.
I know somebody, they separate their room to renting out to the students, like $500 a room, but there's no way you're going to charge them for sort of that kind of thing. Like if I have 3 bedroom, I only take 1, and I'm renting out 2 bedroom for individual people for $500 each room.
Is that what you're doing then?
No, that's not what
okay,
I'm doing.
Okay, well, I guess that's the...
But I just saying, then they use probably more water or same water as them, but we get charged each person, each unit. But like the people have multi-room, they're renting out each room, they only charge one sewer bill. What I'm saying is, could you please consider the water usage and the sewer bill?
We are going to be having a presentation shortly about proposed new rates. So if you want to stay for that,
sure.
you could find out the answer, perhaps.
Thank
All
you.
Right. Thank,
thank,
you.
You.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Ma'am? Ma'am?
No, our palm tree is like 20 years old and died because no water. No, not at all. That's right, very close by here, actually.
Thank you.
All right, thank you. Any other public comment at this point? And then we'll close public comment. We'll move on to approval of the minutes of our last meeting, January 29th. Has everybody had a chance to look at them? Any questions on them? I thought it was amazing what you captured, given the length of the meeting.
I move to approve the minutes of the last meeting.
Second?
I'll second that.
All right. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay. Director's report. We have a report from Rob. Has everybody had a chance to look at it? Any comments?
Aye.
Okay. Debbie, do you? No. Jan?
Yeah, I do have one question, Rob. And it's only because I was out there when we did the thing about the Morro Bay or the Morro Creek crossing of the bridge. And I just read in the Bay News that there was issues regarding the Chumash Indians at all. And I guess I was, when I read it in the newspaper, I'm not always quite sure how much of it's valid or not. Have you had the opportunity to read that article?
I didn't see the article, but there was an issue on site. Our environmental consultant released the contractor to start work before they had completed their mitigation plan and had the Northern Chumash review that. So we've had a chance to prepare that. The Northern Chumash have reviewed it, and we're back working.
According to the newspaper article, you basically remove that environmental consultant from that particular phase, put Rincon on. Is that an accurate statement?
That's correct.
Oh, okay. I just want to make sure,
yeah.
Especially for the public,
yeah.
If whether what they're reading in the paper is actually accurate
yeah.
or not. Thanks.
Anybody else comment?
No.
I just had a question. I noticed that the street and sidewalk and storm drain maintenance has shifted back to the public works office.
That's right. I'll take this opportunity to say that we do have a public works department now. Our city manager did a minor reorganization of some departments, so put maintenance back into public works, street, storm drain, parks, and sidewalk maintenance is now under public works. Recreation is purely recreational activities, and we formed a new community development department with building planning, code enforcement, and ultimately economic development will be in community development. So a little reorganization, and so now we have the folks that are working on the engineering for streets and sidewalks in the same building offices with the folks that are maintaining them. So a little bit better communications.
I for one, glad to hear it, quite frankly. It feels more like what I generally see in cities I've been in, where the public works takes care of all the maintenance features of the public services in the community itself. And community development, in its own right, deserves its own department for that purpose. So I do applaud the city manager on that. I thought, you know, at least he's bringing it back more in line with what you would ordinarily see in most cities. Thank you.
Thank you.
So we'll have a little few growing pains. We have some website modifications to do to make sure that it's all clear. We're not going to immediately go out and buy new hats and shirts. And so
I want one. If you
We have to wait for that stuff to kind of wear out before we're replacing it. And as you can see, there's also on your agenda package a new city logo that council adopted. And anything that's printed or already in existence, we're not replacing that quite yet. But this electronic media, there's no reason not to replace that right away with the new city logo.
How about the size of the trucks?
Size of the trucks still stay the same. We'll still use the same trucks.
Okay,
although we are probably buying a new one ton, a little bit bigger sewer truck soon. So
with the new logo.
Maybe with a new logo on it, too.
Thank you.
Okay. It'll be the first, yeah.
We're going to get back to our discussion of the preliminary water and sewer rate study. So, Rob.
Yes, I'm going to bring Alex Handlers back up. And he has a presentation for us and some modifications to the last report that we saw. He's going to load that on the computer right now. And maybe I think he's going to get some help. Oh, no. He's got it. You can do it from the podium or from the table, whichever you're more comfortable presenting from. Pointer.
Well, nice to see everyone again. Thank you for sitting through, hashing through all the details last time. I'm going to give you another presentation today. It's going to be boiled down from what it is last time. Some slides, I'm not going to cover every point. Obviously, ask me questions if you want a little more detail on something. But we have a couple of alternatives on the water side and also on the sewer side. I know that packet that was sent out, I think I sent out, maybe I finished it on Monday or something. It didn't have all the sewer stuff in there yet. There's still some stuff I was vetting with the city and also internally looking back at the data. But I do have it in this presentation, and this will be available publicly because you don't have it right now, so you can see all the numbers. But the goal tonight, to kind of walk through the rate alternatives, water, then sewer, and hopefully get direction on what we're going to bring to council. We're planning to go to council next week, next Tuesday actually, for a workshop. So it's not the final, but we want to get your input to present to them so we can keep the process rolling and get the Prop 218 process started. So water, we already know there's no water rate increases in 20 years. Water rates are lower than they were in 1995 by 36% adjusted for inflation. People use less water now, so people are paying the least amount on the water side that they ever have. Hence the extremely low water bills for six units. Unfortunately, the water is in worse shape than the sewer. The water is in deficit mode, almost $1 million. You're out of compliance with your debt covenants. Here's the rate history here. Nothing since 1995. You're already familiar with this. Your rates are on the lower side compared to a lot of other agencies out there. Doesn't mean anything. Someone whose rates are low might, it doesn't mean someone's doing any better than anyone else. Everyone's got their own cost of service. So this is just for informational purposes only. The financial challenges you're facing real quickly. Number one, with no rate increases for 20 years, you've starved the water enterprise of funds. You're in deficit mode, $940,000 this year according to the budget. You need to get back up to even. You are facing a lot of capital needs. Some of them have been deferred for years. You've got a lot of aging infrastructure. The capital plan identifies about $9 million of water system improvements. It's a bit front-loaded. You need storage tanks that you should have for fire protection, et cetera. Desal plant needs to be brought back up to snuff. Automatic meter reading, a lot of old pipelines. The third thing, I didn't talk about this last time, but Rob filled in a little bit more, was long-term water supply. Your state water contract accounts for over half of your operating costs. It's currently $2.2 million per year. It's a big chunk. Unfortunately, there's some huge problems with the water in the Delta. So the Bay Delta Conservation Plan is going to be rolling out in upcoming years. We don't know exactly when the big costs are going to hit for building these peripheral tunnels or canal, whatever they're going to do. But the cost for the Bay Delta Conservation Plan is currently estimated in the $25 billion range. Everyone who gets their water from the State Water Project is going to be facing large cost increases. Same here. The little bit of good news is that the $750,000 of debt service you pay each year for the pipeline that brings that water here is going to be ending after seven more years. So that's $750,000 going away. However, we believe that's going to be replaced, coincidental timing, with funding for a future recycled water project that's going to be built after the reclamation-ready treatment plan is complete. And there are some possibilities for weaning yourself off the state water contract water that the city's continually going to be evaluating. So that could be a big hit. That's not a huge portion of the rate increases. We only assume 5% cost increases per year for the state water project water. But, you know, there's a lot of variables there in the future. You've also had water sales come down, which have hurt the revenues, and obviously cost inflation is something that hits every agency. So you need at least a few percent increase each year just to stay even. This just shows that how your water use has been historically. It's come down in recent years about 7% compared to prior years. I'm going to skip that last slide. We developed financial projections. The details are in the printed materials, and they'll be on here if anyone wants to see. But this kind of shows graphically the breakdown of expenses. This is the city's operating costs, which are projected to increase a few percent a year going forward. Out here, there's some new recycled water costs after the recycled water plant comes online, so it's expected to go up by a few hundred thousand a year. The green estate water project costs, which escalate at 5% a year. Again, there's some future unknowns, what's going to happen out here. When you do these projections, no one has a crystal ball, what's coming down the pipeline. You've got a lot of moving parts, so you kind of try to reasonably estimate, taking a look to the future and aim in the right direction, understanding that it could be in 4 years, even though if this is a five-year rate plan, in 4 years there could be some significant changes that need to be incorporated, and the city could be coming back to evaluate some different rate increases, maybe less, lower rate increases. We don't know at this stage. The yellow is the your share of CCWA, Central Coast Water Authority bonds. Those go out to 21-22, then they're gone. However, the orange is a new debt service. You don't have cash in your water fund to fund the high-priority capital needs, so it appeared you're going to have to borrow about $3.5 million to take on some of those highest-priority capital needs for the water system. If you get your rates in place, you should be able to obtain some kind of subsidized funding from the state is going to be the goal. So that's what this orange represents, debt service for about $3.5 million for high-priority capital. But out here, the yellow goes away, but if the old bonds go away, but you have new, very likely state revolving fund loans that are going to kick in, which are going to be more expensive than what goes away, but at least there's a little bit of offset. That's for the recycled water project. We're not raising rates based on this in the first 5 years. This is more of a long-term look. And then finally, the purple on the top is the capital, pay-as-you-go capital. Rates need to more than double over the next 5 years. On the water side, that shouldn't be a surprise to anybody. Unfortunately, due to your current situation, you need a bigger rate increase in year one to meet your debt service coverage covenants and restore financial stability. These are your current rates. 1643, and as I was corrected last time, historically this was not considered a separate fixed charge. This was considered the charge for 3 units of water. So there was no fixed charge. But for me, it doesn't make a difference, whether the 1643 was not a fixed charge. It was really a usage charge for the first 3 units, and then, or was it a fixed charge with no charges? Economically, it's the same from my perspective. Low water users get a pretty good deal here in Cambria. A lot of your costs are fixed costs. It's not all related to usage. So low users, currently pay $16.43. If they use less than 3 units of water, they don't pay any more. And then the variable charges escalate from 556, so, you know, by a few cents for every unit of water. We mentioned with the rate structure observations, those first three units of water that people are paying that $16 and change for, but don't have to pay per unit for the first three. If you had that as a regular fixed charge, it would mean that people weren't paying for 32% of the water. 32% of the water is 0 to 3. It's a very high percentage of the water here in this community. Your fixed charges generate about, I'm going to keep calling them fixed charges rather than the charge for the first three units. They generate about 30% of your rate revenues. That's right in line with the California Urban Water Conservation Council recommendations. They want to see your variable charges recovering in the range of 70% of rate revenues to make sure there's adequate conservation incentive. More recovery on the usage side is more conservation incentive since people have to pay more per unit. Low-use customers and customers with second homes, they're two different types of customers you have, but they both benefit under the current rate structure because they're paying a low fixed charge. It's obviously disproportionately lower than your fixed costs, and there's no additional charge on top of that for the first three units of water. So you're giving low-use customers a big break, which is fine. A lot of communities do. I just want to point that out. At the same time, the high-use customers, they have to buy a lot of their water at the, at the higher tiers. But at the same time, they also benefit from paying a low fixed charge. What's more common in California is to have fixed charges that ratchet up based on meter size, and maybe the large customers get a little break on the usage size. But you kind of have it the other way. We're not looking to change it. There's historical precedent there, and there's no single correct way of doing rates. So we came up with an initial draft rate structure that was presented last time, four tiers. The tier rates are phased in over 5 years. One thing that we're doing is phasing the charges in for the lowest levels of water use, which are currently, we're moving to a system where it's more like a fixed charge plus a variable charge, regardless of how it was considered in the past. So the fixed charge increases, it almost doubles over the 5 years. And the variable charges would increase in the tiers. Currently, no additional charge. The first thing we presented last time was that charge going from 2 to 3 to 4 to 5 to 6. And the other chart, for the higher tiers, the rates would be quite a bit higher. This shows a breakdown of the water sales in each tier as being proposed. Yeah. Let me just forward here. This is a small change we made based on some of the comments we received last time. We could change it even more if desired by next Tuesday. It's easy for me to tweak around with these things. Again, there's an infinite number of ways of doing it. But this time what we did is we bumped up the low tier, the first tier, to start a little bit higher, and that was allowed the second tier to be a little bit lower. Just a little bit, but by the end of the 5 years, they all get to the same place as with the first structure. So it's just a little bit of a different of a phase-in. This is what it looks like. If you were to add these new rate increases for a typical home using 6 units of water per month, nothing for years, then you'd see these big bump ups. It works out to be the 1995 rate with 3.5% cost escalation. So you're just bringing the rates back where they are due to inflation over the long term, according to this perspective. There are some other rate issues. I don't know if we hashed through so much last time. I don't know if there's enough time to get into detail on every single point, but we were looking for a little guidance on a few other issues. One is the notion of a pass-through for state water project costs. Again, this is more than 50% of your current operating costs. A few years ago, the California legislature adopted a bill that allowed agencies to adopt automatic pass-throughs for wholesale water costs. Which has since been extended to sewer costs as well. So if you have something out there that's a big unknown, it's a big wholesale water cost, what we could do is put in your Prop 218 notice, we could adopt the rates as they are, but put an additional clause in there that gives the city authority to pass through any wholesale rate increases that are in excess of what was assumed in the study. So if we only assume 5% state water project cost escalation. If in year three this Bay Delta Conservation Plan takes off and doubles the state water contract costs, and you're at a point where you're still relying on that water, having this clause in your Prop 218 notice would give the city authority at their discretion to pass through that additional increase in state water contract costs. So it just gives flexibility. It could be in your Prop 218 notice. In order to implement a pass-through, there has to be some sort of, you know, verbal or written formula put in the notice how the pass-through would occur, how it would impact rates. And then if the city in the future needed to trigger this pass-through, they'd have to send notification to all the ratepayers. You don't have to go through the Prop 218 process, but you have to notify people. I don't see this being used if the state water contract was to go up 6% instead of 5%. I mean, that's pretty darn close. It's only if there's something, I think, substantial that's going to hit the water enterprise finances that having pass-through authorization gives you the financial flexibility to react and respond on a pass-through basis as initially presented to the ratepayers without having to go through the Prop 218 process again. The next thing was surcharge for desal operations. We talked about this last time. We're still honing our numbers a little bit, but your desal facility hasn't been used so much in recent years, I guess, but there may be the need to use it in the near future. And what's nice is that the city has a few different options for water supply, so if you're, they could try to figure out what's the most cost-effective approach going forward. And there may be a day and time when recycled water can be injected back into the groundwater or pumped to your desal facility, which is already built, treated with reverse osmosis, and delivered to the ratepayers, potentially at lower cost than staying with the state water contract in the long run. But these are future decisions that will be made. And the other thing that we were going to recommend, just to add on to this whole Prop 218 process, is a potential surcharge for water rate shortage. What happens if, because you're, we'll say, disproportionately collecting costs from the variable rates of the system, if everyone's water use goes down 50% in response to some water supply emergency, you're not getting the revenues you need to fund the fixed costs of the system. This is something that's hammered some other agencies. Right up the road, Cambria's water use went down 40%. They adopted some penalties because they were running out of water. People cut back. They got a little bit of penalty revenues, which was nice, but it didn't make up for the deficit that they were getting due to the large decline in water sales. So with a couple of agencies, we've added this on to the Prop 218 process as an additional surcharge if water use goes down 20%, 30%, 40%, that allows an agency to, with council authorization, increase the rates to compensate to restore financial stability. This doesn't generate any new money, but it just restores the financial stability and makes up for the revenue loss from the recycled from the water sales, if you have to cut your water use down by 50% or something like that. Maybe we'll stop it on water right there. Yeah,
that sounds great. I think we'd like to discuss them as separate issues. So thank you very much. Any comments or questions from? Should we start down with Stu this time?
Thank you, Alex. Are we going to be receiving copies of those slides of the new presentation? Do we
yes.
have it now?
Yes. We have it emailed to you, and it will be put on the city's website as well.
Yeah, because I see some different slides up there than we had before.
That's right. We added some new stuff that's in here.
I've got a question about what we're paying per acre foot from the state for water. I don't find that anywhere in down.
Yeah, that's a good question. The state has a lot of fixed costs that you're paying. It's weird. If you were to take all the state water project costs, $2.2 million, divide by 1,300 roughly acre feet that you receive from them, that would be an all-in cost per acre foot. I don't have the number in front of me right now, but we can put it together. Really, the state water project costs a lot of it are fixed charges that you have to pay regardless of whether you take one unit or not. So even the variable charges from the State Water Project are actually a very small share of the overall costs. So even if you get your State Water Project use down to zero, you still have to pay, you know, something approaching what you're currently paying. So there's not really a lot of savings there. And I can get you some detail. They've got, you know, bills and stuff that break out the different components of the State Water Project costs.
I'd appreciate that. Yeah. Also, we pump water from the ground. We pump it from two valleys. And do we keep track of how much water we pump out? I imagine we've got how much electricity we use, and we can figure it out that way. But that's also a useful number to come up with how much water we're buying from the state or obtaining from the state, and also from what we're pumping divided by the number of users and so on, which would give me some fodder to do things with.
Yeah. We could add some I think we need to get a little bit more information on that, but yeah, we could add some of that information for informational purposes.
So I can give you a little bit of that information off the top of my head. Last year we used 1,140 acre feet in state water, 1,140 of our 1,313 allocation, and we used 43 acre feet of well water that was run through our brackish water RO plant. We cannot use currently our well water untreated because it is high in nitrates. So there's a treatment cost to doing that. State water is approximately, I'm talking in round numbers now, approximately $1,600 an acre foot. About 45 of that is variable cost. So we pay almost $1,600 an acre foot for our allocation, whether we take a drop of water or not, because we're paying debt service on the infrastructure that the state built to get the water here. To treat brackish water RO, it's about $1,000 an acre foot. If we were able to use our wells untreated, $150 an acre foot, but we cannot. Our Moro Valley wells, high in nitrate. Our Choro Valley wells, we're limited to using those to the times when Choro Creek is running at above 1.4 CFS. It takes rain for that to happen. It currently is running above 1.4 CFS, but it is also high in nitrates, and we don't have a easy way to get that water into a treatment plant because it goes directly into the distribution system from the Choro Valley wells. So we're fairly well constrained on potable water use in Moro Bay.
I don't see any mention of watershed management anywhere in this. And what are we doing something with looking into the future, and what are we doing with watersheds here? Are we going to have little dams or something to...
Yeah, that's really beyond the scope of the rate study. It's what we are... We do watershed management as part of our general water supply. We are in two permitted basins, so we are appropriators from those two basins. We're not riparian users, so the state board has regulated both the Moro and Choro basins, so we're under those management plans, and we're regulated to how much we can withdraw from either one of those basins. At 1,100 acre feet a year from Choro Basin, 500 acre feet a year from the Moro Basin is what we're our permitted capacity. Should we have a water reclamation facility up in the Moro Valley that is producing water that has the ability to recharge groundwater, we will renegotiate that permit for groundwater extraction because we'll be putting water into the ground that we should be able to permit withdraw from.
The $1,600 per acre foot state fee, does that change yearly? Is that something that, is there any negotiation, or is they just tell you that's what you're paying?
The only thing that changes is the variable charge on that based on how much water we use. There is no negotiations. We signed a contract back in the 90s and refinanced the bonds in 2006. CCWA refinanced them. We're just happen to be one of the payers of that bond amount.
So then over the 5 years as we're trying to reclaim this deficit, it's still the 1,600 acre foot, but plus the variable costs of it then? Or
1,600 would include the variable costs. Okay. I mean, I'm talking in round numbers. Yeah. It's 15-something, but I can't remember the exact dollar amount of it. But when we're talking these big numbers, 1,600 is close enough. Because we're paying $2.2 million a year-ish in state water costs. That's our number one expense in water supply.
The state does have, they try to charge only the cost of service. They don't just make up the cost. They have a whole formula they do based on where you're taking the water from. They allocate the energy of different pumping plants to, you know, each, the use of water that goes through those pumps and things. So, but yeah, you don't have any control over it. So you just have to pay it.
Rob, Alex mentioned that state water is going to come with a large increase with the implementation of this other project coming up. Does our current contract protect us from that and keep us in that $1,600 range per acre foot?
No.
The contract only works one way. It protects them, not us.
We will be paying whatever the cost to get us the water is. Now, we will have an option when those bonds are retired to renegotiate the amount of state water that we take. And if, you know, that's one of council's goals is to diversify our water supply. Right. And perhaps we would reduce the amount of state water that we're using based on a more viable local water supply.
Right. Going back, Alex, to the rate tiers, not to belabor this too much, but I mean, understanding that this is something that has to happen, the city needs this to happen, my concern is keeping the impact financially to our citizens as less harsh as possible. And as Stephen mentioned last week, or when our last meeting was, that it seems the biggest hit comes at Tier 2, from Tier 1 to Tier 2, which would sort of fall into, quote-unquote, the middle-class use. So, again, I always feel like the middle class is getting saddled with the biggest impact. Going that jump from Tier 1 being $2 a unit to Tier 2, $7, and then Tier 3, $8.50. Now, you had some adjustments there. I noticed it was including raising Tier 1 as a mere suggestion. I think something would be less impactful for smaller families, retirees, people on fixed incomes that, you know, may have two or less people in a household, something more along the line of Tier 1, $2 a unit, Tier 2, $5 a unit, Tier 3, $9.50 a unit, and then the people who are really utilizing a lot of water, Tier 4, jump to $13. Just a suggestion, kind of reappropriating that impact. And then one other question I have, this may be actually more for Rob, first, we mentioned last meeting people with hardship cases, and you let us know that a municipality can't offer that kind of program to specific people. It has to come from an outside source, is that correct?
I think the way it works is under Proposition 218, which is in the California Constitution, most attorneys out there believe that you can't have one rate group subsidizing another rate group for
right.
economic purposes, but that doesn't mean you can't have some sort of a low-income program that's funded from another source,
right.
which could be, it could be from things like late fees some attorneys are okay. comfortable with. So there could be general fund money. So you could have something. It just can't mean you raise one customer's rate to pay for it.
Right. So my suggestion, having that come up last time, and then again, I didn't see it in your presentation That would be something I think would be worthwhile to take to the city council. And then this is probably more for Rob. With the installation of all these new electronic meters that will be going in eventually throughout the city, is this going to impact a loss of local jobs, the quote-unquote meter readers? Are we putting people out of work?
We contract with a company out of Atascadero to do meter reading for us. And so we would no longer need to contract for that meter reading work. We haven't read meters in-house for a couple of years because it's more cost-effective for our technicians to run the water system. And it takes them, the company that we use kind of swarms the site. you see them out on their tricycles and scooters.
So it's not going to impact local jobs with city employees of Morro Bay?
No.
Okay, very good. Thank you.
Okay. I'm going to break it into two different areas. First is what you brought back on the actual water rate study. And personally, I do like the modified four-tier rate option. I think the fact that you did bring up the lower one, drop down the second tier, tends to make more sense in a linear fashion. While I can appreciate what David brought up, the problem you have is you still have to make X amount of dollars to cover all your costs that you identified in your five-year study. And to sit there and drop the first one down to two and the next one down to five, you're never going to recapture it. Well, if you went two and five at the beginning, not too many people fall into tier three or tier four at the end of the day, so you'd never probably recapture some of that.
You'd have to make the rates higher, I guess, was the suggestion. Lower rates in tier one and two, and even higher in tier three
and
four.
Yeah, but what I'm driving at is you're going to find out in this town, anybody in a single-family home is probably somewhere between 6 and 10, you know, falling into those 100 cubic feet rates. So I had no problem with it. Actually, I thought that was, for me personally, you answered my concerns. And for that reason, I have no issues or problems with the rate study as you show it now. You brought up a few new issues in regards to that Bay Delta conservation plan and everything else. And that's what I wish to talk to next, because for me personally, I feel people who get their water from the State Water Project are people who absolutely have no other alternatives in how they get that water. I think Morro Bay is in a unique position because, for one, they do have wells, although it has to be treated, that they could get it from. They could actually get it from the sea if they wish to do so. What they need is permits, first of all, which would have to be perfected. And my question is, when they come through with the $25 billion tunnel, which is going to really raise the rates of 1,600 cubic feet, it's going to jump substantially to fund that portion of the project. And as most people don't realize, when you buy water from the State Water Project, whether you take a drop or not, you still cover all the fixed costs of getting that water down from the Delta. So personally, when the 7 years are up, I'm kind of the feeling Morro Bay ought to figure out how to generate their own water from a local base and drop the State Water Project. And this is something out in the future. I'm talking 7+ years. But it's something where at least then you do fix down your costs if you do have the permits in place in order to be able to pump it out of the ground, because then it becomes a regulatory feature where, you know, the Water Quality Control Board allows you to, or the Coastal Commission, whatever their involvement is. But at the end of the day, I would like to see the city moving in that direction 7 years out, and hopefully the $25 billion hasn't kicked in by that point in time, because it's another thing that's going to take a while. And even if they do start to sting us early on in it, at the end of the 7 years, I'd honestly, that's why I sit on this board, is I would like to see where we're self-sufficient. We're one of the few communities that have desalination units in place. And the only reason we're not using them, as Rob just brought up, it costs as much to treat seawater, and trust me, there's a ton of seawater right off Morro Bay that could be treated. And it costs about the same when you include the fixed costs of the State Water Project, and it's going to be even more than $1,600. Trust me, once they finish that so-called tunnel that's supposed to divert across the Delta. from that standpoint, and this is more of my own personal observations, I would like to see the city move in that direction. But the reason we're here tonight is to talk about the water rate study. I think it's good the way I read it now. I do like the modified version because it's something you don't have to defend in the future. Kind of like we talked about the sewer rates, where multifamily was paying more sometimes than single-family units, even though more people live in single-family units than they do in the multifamily or the apartment-style units. I like to see tiers that make some kind of a, even though it's only a few dollars, I feel like I'm making a little bit of a tempest in a teapot, but by the same token, it's that kind of fairness issue where people can sit there and say, gee, that sounds fair. And bringing up what David brought up earlier, and I agree with you, all my knowledge of this is, no, you can't sit there and subsidize certain members from other ratepayers within a group. There can be outside sources that tend to fund those kind of things, and I'd rather see it set up as you set up the rate structure, and then if you're going to subsidize that, you go after that. Thank you.
I'm just going to echo what he said about hopefully the direction of getting off of state water, because I'm just thinking about these things that you're putting into the rate about the pass-through charges, the little pass-through clause, and then a surcharge for people when we, with the usage goes down, and then if these prices go up with the Delta water, I'm thinking it's going to really hit us big. So I just very much agree with him that I hope that the direction is that we get off of state water at some point.
Debbie.
Well, I'd kind of like to review for my own edification my understanding so that I can make a hopefully good decision. You were saying that it's front-loaded. The rates are going to be front-loaded.
That's correct. Because your water enterprise is so far in deficit and you're out of compliance legally, you're supposed to have your rates in compliance all
right
along.
Right, so we're in a hurry to get
a bigger bump up and then phase in the rest of it. So,
right,
yeah.
Right. And I like that idea. I'd like to deal with the hardest part first and then have it level off in time to get to where we need to be legally and, you know, be able to do all the things we need to do. In the talk about the Delta, how far away is that Delta job? 10 years? I mean, I don't
Anyone's
know.
Anyone's guess, yeah.
But that's not going to help us, and I don't think it's really going to be a factor in what we're talking about here in our five-year plan.
No, this would be outside the five-year plan unless they start. Yeah, they have to renegotiate all sorts of contracts just to be able to go out and borrow money for it. So it's going to be a long-term thing would be.
It is.
And who knows how long-term it will be.
So the good news is that we are going to end our state water habit just in time to pay for our new sewer plant. So we're actually just exchanging debt service for eliminating one debt service and starting a new debt service. So we're never going to be out from under our burden. I mean, we're always going to have to keep these rates where they are and continue based on your projections.
In the future years, I mean, if you could get off state water project, I know it's all hypothetical at this stage, mm-hmm. in 6 or 7 years down the line, and instead move to your own supplies treated, obviously it would be a lot more treatment costs having to run it through reverse osmosis, whether it's brackish water or the nitrate well water. But there may be hope that, you know, we were showing, you know, modest future increases in future years. There's always hope that maybe you wouldn't need them.
Right.
It's hard to know.
It is. And the other thing I wanted, I really appreciated your options for the pass-through clause and the desale surcharge and the decline in sales surcharge, because that's extreme conditions. I'm a big fan of insurance, and when I can have something just sitting aside there, I may never, ever get struck by lightning, but boy, I sure would like to be insured if I do. And that's kind of these types of clauses, and although people hear, oh, charges, surcharges, more charges, it's probably never, ever going to happen, but if it does, then you're in a very serious trouble, and you need to be able to find a way out quickly. And so I think that those options are very, very good. I like those a lot. Also, we talked last time about the tax rolling these increases into a tax bill, property tax bill. And I'd like to revisit that with the council.
Sure. I think I was talking about more of that on the sewer side.
Okay.
But yeah, well, but
all right. Then yeah. That's what I wasn't clear
yeah.
about that, and that's why I'm asking. So that was more sewer-based. Okay. And then the effective date of the implementation of these increases was July. Is that what we were talking about?
Oh, yeah, beginning with your budget year, July 1.
Okay. That's it. Thank you.
Okay. I have just a few questions. First of all, I noted that about 30% of the water use is commercial establishments. Is that correct?
That sounds about right.
Yep. So are they paying at the same rates as residential?
Well, actually, this is they pay according to the same rate structure. That's exactly right. The same fixed charge, the same variable charge. It just so happens the way your rates are tilted, you know, low uses of water have lower rates, higher rates for higher levels of water, that some of these larger commercial accounts buy a lot more water at the higher rates than at the lower rates.
Right.
It's the same rate structure, but they probably pay more on average per unit than a small customer.
Right. I'm just wondering if they are essentially paying for 30% of the costs since they're using 30% of the water.
Yeah. I don't have all the exact, not remembering every detail of the usage, but my suggestion would be, there's many legitimate perspectives on this, that your large water users are paying more than their exact share of water use. So if they use 30%, their revenues are going to be higher than 30% coming from those sources. That's not a legitimate thing because you have to do more and more extreme measures to meet those higher levels of use. I'm not going to go into all the perspectives, but yeah, they probably disproportionately pay on the high side.
I'm yeah. sure. I'm just curious to know if you can figure that out. I would like the answer to that, in part because those folks obviously can pass on any additional cost to their customers. But of course, you know, the residential folks can't do that. So I'm just hoping that they pay their fair share, and they would be paying their fair share under the new rate structure. That was.
Yes. Now, I'll just say, everyone feels they're paying more than their fair share, no matter who they are. So,
right. No,
but
no.
Yes,
but I'm.
I hear what you're saying, and the answer is yes. I assure
about
you that they're
commercial.
Yeah.
Establishments versus residential.
Yes.
My second question: I would like to know the rationale for moving from the current structure, where each successive unit of water goes up by a small amount, to having a four-tiered, so that all of folks within a range are paying the same rate. And I'm just wondering what the rationale for that was.
Yeah, that's a good question, because, again, there's no single right way of doing it. So what you currently have, it's kind of unique in California. I mean, most agencies have, like, inclining tier rates these days. Some have a few other types of rate schemes. Some still have uniform rates. It's rare I see those inclining rates per tier. So when we looked at that, I mean, you don't have to change it, so I don't want to suggest you need to change it. But I think it's a little odd to have a rate like that. And then behind the scenes, we have to come up with some kind of cost justification for that. So we'd have to come up with a cost justification for each separate tier. Makes it a little bit of a challenge.
It seems like it's based purely on use that way, purely on use.
Well, it's all
for each successive unit that you use, you're paying so much more, as opposed to a set rate for units 4 through 10.
Yeah, I mean, you're paying per unit either way, you're right, but the increase is you either buy it in a block and then you step up to the next block for higher levels of use. There's a logic both ways. So the rationale for, you know, I don't know if there's a compelling rationale to change everything, what you're doing. We were just, you know, throwing out there as kind of what's a more standard approach out there, where, you know, the lowest levels of use would get it in the first block. You step up to the next block, which goes up to 10 units. Again, that's most of the single family use is somewhere, you know, 0 to 10. Then you'd start kicking into higher, the next block up and the next block up. After that, there's an infinite number of ways you can do it. So I don't know if I have a good answer to your question.
Well, I was just curious because it seemed to me that with each successive unit costing more, that was more of an incentive for conservation. Way, when you're once you're in a block, you're paying at a certain rate. Seems to me logically, it's less of an incentive to conserve water. That's all.
I'm going to suggest it's not, and here's the reason why. Someone in this tier, you know, currently pays $5.56. Then maybe it's $5.59, and now they'll be paying a. It depends on where you are. If everyone's used to in a block paying a certain level of water, and or you go from where it's a tier, let's say right now you keep stepping up at an angle, and now within that block of water you're keeping it flat. The people at the low end, within that tier, someone using 51 units, is now going to be seeing a little bit higher rate than they would have under the just more gradual rate structure. What people face for conservation, it's not so much the tiers or the breakpoints, it's what does it cost per unit of water. And there are some people who would pay a little bit more per unit of water under the current rate structure, and there are some who would pay a little more under this rate structure. So I don't think it's any more or less conservation incentive than the other just because someone's paying 3 cents more per unit. Is that really going to drive use? Here there's bigger bump ups. So
okay.
It's all relative.
All
this
right.
Water your stuff.
No,
it's again,
thank
I'm not
you. I was
question
just curious
perfectly.
If there.
Yeah.
It sounds like it's more common to have fewer tiers. Let's put it that way.
It is, and there was just some anomalies with your tiers also, where they would sometimes they'd go up 5 cents, and then it would go down 2 cents for the next level, and then up 4 cents, and up 3 cents.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. And I'm assuming that if you use any part of that unit, you're charged for the full unit. Is that correct?
I think the way the meters work is when it, if someone uses 0.1 of a unit, it doesn't register as being a full unit till it kicks over, till the next unit is fully used. But if someone uses partial unit, they don't pay for it this month, but they'll get it,
the
next
month. Don't. Yeah. It doesn't reset
okay.
to zero.
Okay. And I also noticed in the report that you wanted a minimum fund reserve of 25%. Is that correct?
For planning purposes, I always think it's a good idea to target to maintain a minimum prudent level of reserves.
I was just wondering if that was a requirement of some kind, or is that just good business practice?
Good business practice. Yeah, there's no requirement. The danger is if your fund reserves go down towards zero, you have your back's against the wall if something unexpected happens. So I thought that was kind of a minimum prudent level. Certainly we see agencies that have a lot higher levels of fund reserves. If you want to be, a AA water agency, you probably need more like, 50, 60%
okay.
in reserves. But for prudent planning, that's what we were recommending.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I did want to also speak to those additional rate issues, and this is just my opinion. I concur that I think we really need to get off of state water, and the sooner the better. So I think everybody's in agreement on that one. So I think that one, the first one, is kind of too far out there. I would really like us to focus on the next 5 years and what's likely to happen in the next 5 years and not drag in. This is going to be, I think, such a contentious issue to begin with, and a lot of folks are going to be very upset. And the more we add into this that could upset people and make them think that their costs could go even higher, I think that's not going to help us. So I would keep it really simple and just focus on the rates. That's my opinion. Would you like us to make recommendations on this now, or would you? We should have any additional public comment.
I would suggest public comment first,
okay.
And then maybe after public comment, you could have some discussion and maybe
okay.
some conclusionary statement if you so chose.
Okay. All right. Sure.
Just for clarification and for public, so if you were to use 4 units, you're just getting charged for 3 units at either the $2 or $3 range, and then only for 1 unit at the $6 range? Or
that
you
is
get charged for all four at $6 range?
Currently, that's the way it works. You pay that $16.43, and it covers your first 3 units.
Mm-hmm.
So you pay nothing additional for the first 3. Then you start paying for the 4th unit. What we were proposing is, you still keep a fixed charge, for example, like the current $16, but you start paying per unit. But it phases in over a few years
But I think so. What my question is:
zero. Now you start paying for every unit of water.
So when you hit four units, are you paying for the first three still at the $3 rate, and then only for
correct.
One unit?
Correct. Yes. These are marginal tiers, so everyone buys the first three units at three. Then above that, it goes to the next. They're not charged. For example, if they're in this tier, they don't buy all their water at $9. Thank you for
I just want to clarify that for the public. Yeah.
That would help water conservation, though.
More or less. And just for further clarification on there, if you're using like the four units, like you said, then that's the base price of 23, and then the first three units would be a total of $9, right? And then you'd go to the fourth unit for $6.
Correct.
Okay.
And that would be spelled out in the Prop 218 notice to make sure people understand how the rates would be applied.
Okay. And
before I shut up here and turn it over, I just want to make a couple of quick comments real briefly, just because there's always I hear what people are saying that, hey, we don't want to be hitting the moderate users and the low users. And what I can tell you is, under the current rate structure, you're currently giving them probably a pretty good break. They pay low fixed charge. They're not paying for the first three units. The rates are a lot lower for the first few units than they are for the higher units. So from some perspectives, people could say you're kind of giving a break to the low users. I would suggest that even in the what's being recommended here, what we were trying to do was kind of phase in from where you currently are to, the tiers at the end. That's why it might have looked like there was some more bump ups in some tiers than others in the original ones, because currently people are paying nothing in tier one. And so that's why I originally said, okay, we'll bump them up a little to two, so it's a little more gradual. But that was a key point I wanted to make. No one's looking to nail the low users or anything like that. They're still going to be receiving, I would suggest, great benefit from what's being proposed, in that they're buying most of their water at the low tiers and have a relatively reasonable fixed charge on top of it. They'll be paying more than they do now. It's almost like if you're charging one person $1 per unit and someone else $5 per unit, then you say, hey, everyone, you're going to pay $6 a unit. But then the person who's paying one says, hey, that's no fair. My rates are going up $5. Theirs only went up one. So everything's a matter of perspective, and the rates are always a balance of competing objectives. So I will just leave it at that, and thank you.
One more. Rob, just a quick question on when we get new meters, how far down the road is that? Is that going to be this first year that we have the rate hike, and then possible rates would go up because of water loss that we're capturing now?
So it's a council. It's on the council goal list to convert from our current metering system and billing system to this automatic meter reading system. They haven't adopted that goal yet. We have had change out to AMRs in our capital budget starting this year and phasing those meters in over 3 years. We would probably make some adjustments with that if council decided to do that and contract with a company to, it's kind of a turnkey operation, and they can do it as fast or as slowly as we want. We've heard from the perspective from other users where they're recovering some of that unaccounted for water, and they haven't had to, these are maximum rates that we'll be setting. We can only take in what our expenses are and that reserve. So if we don't need the money because we're now recovering all of our unaccounted for water, we wouldn't impose those maximum rate increases. We need a certain amount of cash. It kind of doesn't matter how we get there, whether it's increased rates or charging for all the water that's going through the meter.
Rob, we talked briefly at the last meeting about our borrowing ability and the ability to get the lowest possible rate. And with $936 in the red for this fiscal year, shouldn't we be raising our rates a little quicker to recoup that so that we get back on? There was a mention about 125% and having that in reserve, and that will affect our bonding ability for our
Yeah, that's exactly why I think Alex has proposed that quick jump up of 45% that first year, and then it kind of levels out to get us whole with our get us out of the hole. That $940,000 plus be able to make our debt covenants that debt coverage ratio. So that's built into this existing rate structure. It gets us out of the hole that first year. Because I can imagine that the state's lowest bond rates, those agencies aren't going to look favorably on us to borrow money if we're not meeting existing debt coverage covenants.
Okay, let's open public comment. Are there any comments on this?
Small suggestions, because in Hong Kong we use ocean water to flush the toilet, and I was because I heard it's very cheap to use some water without treatment. So like wash the car or gardening or flush the toilet, take shower, or maybe you could use that type of water. In Hong Kong, our house, we have every household have two water supply. So one is we rather like a quarter of a cost to use it a fresh toilet, and then the other ones use drinking and stuff. So just maybe you can think about it.
Thank you.
Yeah, Bob Keller, Morro Bay. This report sounds the most logical way to go. It has the best way to get us going and get us out of debt. And I think this is the best report, and I think the council or you guys should vote for this and move it on to City Council. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Anyone else want to comment on this issue? Okay, let's close public comment.
Well, I was just going to say, if we want to discuss it a little bit, I felt well with the water rate study as shown. I want to divorce the other part about talking about getting off state water, everything else, because I think it's beyond the purview of what we're trying to do tonight. And for me, I do tend to lean towards the modified rate structure as opposed to the one originally proposed. And that's the way I would probably like to see it go to the City Council. But ultimately, the City Council is going to choose between the two, but I'd like to give that recommendation on the basis that I feel like it's something you could justify in the future. Thanks.
Mm-hmm. Can I add one more thing to my comment? Oh. I agree we should get off state water because we don't want to be indebted for the rest of our lives. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Anyone else?
I've just got a comment about the lady that came up and talked about the water use, and I actually put in a second water meter at her house so I could tell what I was using in outside the house. And we do the bucket brigade out of the shower, and we wash the car with that and that kind of thing. And I think that the city needs to should get on a program to educate the public here about some easy ways they can do things to conserve water.
Actually, they do a lot of things, especially in the stormwater management, where they talk about different ways of reusing water that comes actually off the rains and everything else.
When I walk all over town, and when I walk in the morning, there's water running down gutters.
Yeah, well, even you have that too.
So, you know, the mechanism that we've got to say, can we help these people? You know, what's going on?
But
we need that mechanism running, and we need to emphasize that.
There's been a lot of that going on. I mean, speaking personally, I tore out my lawn and put in a fake lawn, which is beautiful, by the way. And I had got rain barrels. A lot of my neighbors have tons of rain barrels. And it's really, conservation is really
the one part I will bring up that the lady brought up about Hong Kong is you'd have to set up a whole new infrastructure. I'll call it, they used to call them blue water or gray water lines or whatever you want to call it, where you have to have a whole other infrastructure that brings that water in. It'd probably be cheaper to do the desalination process
the treatment
on the actual seawater and then
great
send it
idea,
through the
though.
present. It is if you're starting a brand
yeah.
new town and
yeah.
you're installing the pipes at that point in time.
Yeah. Well, are we ready to recommend? How do the rest of you feel about the alternative rate structures?
I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
No, go
ahead.
I agree with what we've been presented with tonight.
And which one?
The modified.
The modified?
Mm-hmm.
Jan?
I agree, too. It all makes sense to me. The modified one looks good.
Yes, tonight's modified version, I think, is acceptable. Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah, I think with Rob's explanation of how new meters might affect things and how this is just being a max, I think I'm fine with the modified tier as well.
Okay. Stu?
I agree with that also. And of course, here again, at the risk of being redundant, we need to educate the public on what we're doing with this and the reason why this is happening. And I think with that message put out there, I think that that our citizens will get right on this and do what we need to do.
Okay.
Well, I'll go ahead and make a motion then okay. for the water rate study is presently proposed with the modified tier structure as we were presented tonight.
That we recommend
yeah,
that the city
motion
council
to recommendation to city
approval. Okay.
And I'll second that.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Aye. Opposed? Okay. What about the additional issues? Do we wish to make a recommendation on that?
I guess what I heard from the group here is, was anybody here, maybe I'll start with, is anybody against the idea of trying to move away from state water? Because one of the issues was the fact of the whole tunnel system they're looking at up in the Delta and the additional costs that are going to be borne by the city of Morro Bay for the fixed rate side of this if we keep going in this process. Was anybody still on board to want to keep state water, say, 7 years from now?
My comment on that would be we have to identify sources of water.
Yes.
Being our watershed or being put a straw in the pipe that goes down Ironwood.
Yeah, my feeling is if the permits were in place, there is a supply of water here. You're living out in Victorville. You may not have water, and you don't have a source of water to even consider. Here what holds back the city of Morro Bay, and Rob could correct me if I'm wrong, is the permitting process of how much you could pump from the wells, how much you could take from the ocean. Is that a fair statement?
There are some physical constraints also with the limited amount of groundwater supply. It's not completely endless.
But how about the ocean itself?
The ocean, I think there's plenty of...
Short of talking, the infrastructure may not be there with enough well pumps in the ocean side of it. But
oh, you're talking the ocean side. I was talking our Morro and Choro Valley
right,
wells.
The brackish water.
The brackish portion. Water side.
I'm talking both because even at 1,600 acre feet a year, it's still going to be cheaper than after the point in time you reach when they put the so-called Delta Conservation Plan into place. I see that as a cheaper fix, to be honest with you, unless I'm missing something totally, and that's why I'm asking you, Rob. I may be missing certain limitations that may not be there.
There are some physical constraints. The Morro Basin is drying up,
right.
So without rainwater to recharge it, we are an appropriator, so our rights are most junior there. So,
but still, you're talking the brackish side,
rely more on the saltier water than the fresh water. The same thing in the Choro Valley, maybe to a lesser degree during some parts of the year. We have a stream flow permit requirement that we need to make before we can withdraw water. But there, it's more of a timing when we can use the water. It's typically high in nitrates, and we don't have a good way to treat it. So it's more of an infrastructure issue in the Choro Valley.
Well, let me stop a sec. If we took Morro and Choro totally out of the equation, is there any environmental reasons why we couldn't pull saline water from the ocean in the amount to meet the needs of the city of Morro Bay if you had the permits in place to do
we,
so.
We might need a couple more production wells.
No, part, the infrastructure maybe.
Yeah.
What I'm talking about is would we be pulling too much water that you see some kind of environmental killer to this project if you wish to proceed in that fashion?
Not based on the amount of water that we would use.
Yeah, we're talking 1,200 acres.
If the state was able to permit the Poseidon facility down in Southern California with millions of gallons a day of water production, there's a way to do it. We may not have all the infrastructure in place to do that.
I follow that part of it.
Yeah.
And that would be part of the cost, but it's not going to cost you $25 billion like they're talking or whatever.
Hopefully, or even
was.
Our share of $25 billion.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, I see.
So we may need a more capacity on an outfall, let's say, if we increase the capacity of
for your brine water.
For the brine water, yeah.
Just to make clear to everyone, they have to get rid of the salts once they pull it out of
right.
the desalination plant. Thanks, Rob. And that answered my question. So back to the board. Was there anybody here that's not all in favor of trying to move in that direction you see in the future? Because we're trying to make a recommendation here on this second.
Although you're talking about this issue now, the other rate issue.
The pass-through portion of it.
Right. I think I would be
asking our thoughts on it.
Yeah, I would be opposed to including that in the
yeah.
rate.
I'm surprised, but that's the way it goes. I think that pass-through and the desal surcharge and the decline in sales is a great insurance policy. It'll never, ever be used, but it's a great option to have in an emergency. But I think everybody wants to get rid of state water. Nobody wants state water. I'm sure that if we took a poll, nobody wants state water. But we are committed for 7 years, I believe, and we have a 5-year plan, and the delta isn't happening for 10 years. So I think we're just getting a little bit ahead of ourselves. Should we look towards new water sources? Of course. And I think Morro Bay has been doing that since it was incepted, since its inception. So I don't think there's really anything new here. I just think we're kind of putting the cart before the horse. We haven't paid off the state contract yet. It's going to be 7 years. And the 5-year plan is going to put us back where we need to be. So I think I'm with Marla. Let's just focus on 5 years and not worry about the peripheral
rate plan.
Stuff.
Okay. Then, so we're not looking towards making recommendation on this
on these issues.
Okay.
Not yet.
Okay.
All right.
Just let me, if I could, just
sure.
take a moment.
Absolutely.
Water conservation first. We do have a water conservation webpage. Maybe it's not publicized as much as we should. And you'll be seeing in your mailbox a water conservation newsletter that I think went out today or maybe hitting the mail tomorrow. So it'll have some ideas for water conservation, what you can do. This spring, later this spring, we're going to be rolling out some retrofit incentives, rain barrel program retrofits funded by the city council adopted at their last meeting, along with the retrofit requirement for new construction. If somebody can't do the retrofit requirement, they can pay an in-lieu fee, and we'll use that to fund other water conservation methods that the general public that maybe not be redeveloping their site can take advantage of.
Okay.
So we'll be rolling that out this springtime.
Thank you. I would like to add that I'd love to see us do something with the commercial establishments with respect to water conservation. I know that people have told me who've stayed here in Morro Bay that they've stayed in motels where there's no sign to basically conserve water, reuse your towels, et cetera. So I think that there's a big opportunity to conserve there, and we should be more proactive in reaching them. So are we ready to move on to sewer? Okay.
Thank you. And Alex will come back up and...
Yeah, a quick comment on this stuff. We're just trying to get guidance on this because it doesn't mean you're necessarily going to it's just this stuff needs to be included in the whole Prop 218 if you want it. We could bring it up for council input also. Maybe that would be a legitimate thing to do as well, and say there's differences of opinion, because often there are just differences of opinion on many different things. Okay. Sewer. Sewer is a little different because the city has been raising rates on the sewer side every year, so your sewer fund is starting in a lot better shape. However, you do have quite a big mountain to climb with the new treatment plant. So here's a history of sewer rates. Unlike the water rates, you've raised sewer rates every year for the past, 15-plus years. Recently, it's been 5% annual increases. To some people, it might sound like a lot. To me, it doesn't sound like a lot, seeing what a lot of agencies had to do. But it keeps compounding year after year, and it keeps your revenues in line with your costs. And that's been a good thing, I think. So that's why you're starting in a better position, and you don't need quite as high rate increases as I think people initially thought you needed for the treatment plant. Here's a comparison of the current, typical single-family rate from a lot of other communities out there. And I think Los Osos is even higher because they pay assessments on property tax roll. They had to do a whole new treatment plan and collection system. So you're in the middle of the pack. And a lot of these other agencies are going to be facing rate increases, but who cares what everyone else does? You've got to do what you need to do to cover your costs. The big financial challenge, obviously a new $75 million estimated cost for the new wastewater treatment plant. You've also got some capital needs from your own collection system and for the existing treatment plant. The existing treatment plant's got some highly needed projects that have been put off year after year after, few years, hoping that you'd have this new system in place and you'd never need to do these projects. Unfortunately, you do have, I think somewhere in the $2 million range over the next few years to keep you got to keep meeting your permit requirements while you're building the new plant until it's here. But you do have a lot of aging infrastructure in the pipelines, too. So the new facility is the big driver, but also you need funding for, capital and cost inflation. Again, we came up with 10-year projections. You could see the yellow bar here. That's the new debt service for the state revolving fund loan for funding a new treatment plant. And that's just your share of it. We assumed in our projections that Cayucos was paying for 25% of the facility or so. It turns out that they may not want to be a partner within you in this, but may want to just be a customer of the city at the end of the day, which is another option. In that case, the debt service would be higher, but you'd also be getting revenues from them, which would be higher. So it's kind of a financial wash at the end of the day. And here in the early years, you can see, in addition to the pipeline, long-term pipeline stuff, you've got some other kind of critical needs you have to address in the near term. On the sewer side, because you're starting from a stronger place and then you have to go up to this mountain, this debt service is not hitting for a number of years. But by aiming your rates in the right direction, starting now, it enables you, you might have a little surplus some years, deficits other years, but enables you to cash fund a substantial amount of capital needs, get those projects complete, then that revenue is available to help fund the debt service over the longer term. So that was good. You don't need to do any other borrowing, even though you have a lot of near-term capital needs on the sewer side. This is your current rates. All the residential units pay $45.59 per home, plus they pay additional amounts if it's a single-family resident over 10 units of water. They have to pay extra, which is kind of opposite the way I normally think of it. Normally, high levels of use are capped on the sewer side because it typically means it's not indoor water use, it's outdoor water use, which shouldn't be billed. So if someone's using 20 units of water, odds are it's for some kind of outdoor landscape irrigation. Most agencies, their sewer rates, if they're two-thirds of agencies, even maybe higher, have just fixed rates for sewer customers. Every residential unit pays the same, $45 a month, regardless whether it's single-family, multifamily. Some agencies have a little reduced rates for multifamily users, recognizing that their flow to the system is lower. However, there's still a substantial amount of fixed costs. And a smaller percentage of agencies have a variable component to the sewer rates. Typically, that variable component is based on winter water use being an approximation of what's going into the sewer rather than summer use. The reason that might not be a good idea here is because you've got so many vacation homes, they have no winter use, or it's one unit, Meanwhile, they're using a lot of water in the summer, so if you try to make it on winter use, you know, one group of customers might not be paying what they should be paying. So we're recommending, you know, so you have it based on annual water use, monthly water use. It's just a little weird the way it's currently set up. On the commercial side, you've got a number of, everyone pays a rate per unit of water use. And you have all these different categories. But when you look at the rates, there's really only five categories, five different strength categories. So that's what we were recommending, a movement to new commercial rates that are have five categories based on strength, low strength, moderate strength, high strength, et cetera. There was a little bit of reclassification in there that for a couple categories it seemed a little bit off. I won't go into the details there. The other thing with your commercial rates, we're recommending a minimum charge not be higher than the residential rate, because they still have to pay usage charges, you know, subject to this minimum. But the minimum would be set at whatever the lowest rate was for the residential customers as well. You do have some small commercial customers out there that probably use less water. You know, it could be a small office or something like that. On the residential side, we have two options. This is new. It's nothing you've seen before. So let me just walk through that, then I'll show you the numbers. One, what we had kind of proposed last time as an initial take was you could just have a fixed residential charge. For all practical purposes, that's what you currently have. Every dwelling unit would pay a fixed charge per month regardless of their water flow. It's, you know, based on an estimated amount of flow going into the sewer system. What we were recommending, though, in our initial draft is that you have a reduced charge for multifamily and condo units, for kind of lower occupancy units. Really, you've got some apartments that have more people and then some single-family homes out there, so nothing's ever perfect. Again, it's always a balance of competing objectives. You're trying to find something that you think is fair as possible, recognizing nothing is perfectly fair. So that was kind of the recommendation. A charge for the multifamily and condos would be 80% of the charge for single-family homes. The alternative option that I'm going to talk about here also, last time it was brought up, hey, maybe there should be some variable charge component. So we came up with a rate that's would have a fixed component for all residential units, regardless of whether it's single-family, multifamily. Everyone pays that same fixed charge. And then on top of that, they pay a usage charge. So if you use a little bit of water, you only pay a small usage charge. If you use a lot of water, you pay a higher usage charge. The fixed charge was designed to recover 80% of the overall rate revenues from residential customers. So it's still mostly a fixed charge, as in line with your costs are probably mostly fixed costs. For the, you still have to have, whether the people in an apartment or a building, you still need those facilities there to serve them regardless of how much water they're using. You still have a lot of fixed costs for, you know, debt service at the treatment plant, staffing, etc. The variable charges for electricity, chemicals are probably pretty small piece of the picture at the end of the day. So this alternative, 80% fixed charge, all units pay the same fixed charge. A variable charge recovers 20% of the costs. We were recommending as an initial thing, which could subject for input, that the variable charge be capped at 10 units. If someone's using 20 units again in a summer month, it's probably because they're doing a lot of outdoor irrigation. A lot of agencies with variable rates have employed caps, not all of them. Sometimes the caps are a little bit higher, so that's another option. So first let me show you what the two residential options look like. Unfortunately, for some of you, it's not a good angle to see the screen over here. But here's the dividing line right here. The first option that you've seen is a fixed charge. The single-family charge would go from $45 and step up to about $83 per single-family home over the next 5 years. The multifamily would be 80% of that. So they would see a rate, maybe you wouldn't drop it the first year, maybe just keep them where they are. So they'd see no rate increase the first year, and at the end of the line, they'd pay a rate that was about $66 per month. Multifamily, I think, is about 20% of your residential units currently, just to put it in perspective. The other alternative is every residential unit pays a fixed charge. The charge would phase in to recover 80% of the rate revenues. It worked out to be a little over $63 per month. All pay the same. And then they pay a usage charge that's phased in over 5 years. You know, it started out at $1, a little over $1, and phase into a little over $4 over the 5 years. So at the end of the period, they're paying $63 plus $4.14 per metered unit of metered water use, up to 10 units.
Alex, I'm sorry, because I'm having trouble
yes.
reading that. Under the residential alternative B, the fixed charge in 2015-16, what is that number?
Oh, $50.04.
Okay. So basically what you're doing is taking the 44 and the 56 above, or what is it?
Oh, those two.
Those two, and
yep.
trying to average it out to get the same amount of money?
Not exactly averaging them out, but generating the same amount of money via
yeah, same
a little different structure.
From
yeah.
both of them. Okay, I got you.
So, yeah, there'd be a $50 charge for all residential units plus a $1 per unit. And at the end of the line, again, $63 and a little over $4 per unit. So it adds a variable component in here conceptually that most of the cost is still going to be fixed. Everyone's going to pay that same fixed cost. And depending on your usage, there's still a little bit of control over the bill there. You use less water, you pay a little less. You use more, you pay more, but only up to the to 10 units. And down below, it shows like impacts on different levels of use. I mean, they're both they're different rate structures. So it's at the top, at the end of the day, a single-family home is going to pay $83 no matter what they use. At the end of the day, an alternative B, a single-family or a multifamily home, would pay a minimum of $63 if they had no use. You know, a typical user in the 5 to 7, if they're using 5 units, would pay $84, so almost the same as under this other initial version. And if they're using 10 units or more on a monthly basis, it'd be a little over $100. People's use can go up and down over the month, so some people might see a bill of, you know, $75 one month and $92 another month, because there is still going to be some fluctuation in water use. But just conceptually, mostly fixed charge, 20% variable. That's it on the sewer side.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah.
You want to start it, or either?
Stu, do you want have any questions?
Well, I was feverishly making notes, but the one for Rob. I noticed that Cayucas came down. That's Cayucas's pipe that they pushed the sewer pipe through their existing thing. Are we going to be doing some of that too?
Yes, that's we have a capital program that does video inspection and then leak repairs. Unfortunately, probably by the time we get finished with the system, it's time to start over because the ground tends to move a little bit, and we have a lot of rigid material that is buried, so it's probably one of those things that it's a maintenance program that will never end. But yes, we do have an INI reduction program in Morro Bay. They didn't do it so much for INI purposes. They extended their force main down because they have an odor issue. And that was more of the concern, was to move that point where their force main dumps from a problem spot to maybe a different problem spot.
I believe that lower rate for small commercial users is a good idea. You know, we need more small commercial users in town. And I would imagine that's what we were talking about there. Those charts are a little, of course, I can't see them very well, and they're a little confusing to what the levels. I understand one and two. The one on the bottom, I can't quite read.
Oh, that was just some impacts under residential alternative B, because obviously the impacts under A are, you know, everyone pays the fixed charge, so you can see what that is. But in B, there's this fixed and variable, so the bill could be a little different depending on how much water you use. So I just threw some numbers to show what the typical range could look like. But that's so that's the impacts down below, which is almost impossible for you to see at that angle.
That's all I have.
With the discussion of Cayucas possibly not being a partner but being a rate payer, are they responsible for getting it to our city line and they just deal with that separately, or do we have a different rate structure we would apply to them because there might be more needed to serve them in that case without them being a partner?
They would be more of a bulk customer. We're not going to individually charge each of their customers there. So we have a flow meter, and we'd be charged based on the amount of flow proportional to their share of the costs. So about 75-25% roughly. I think in the flow and load study it was 74.56% for Morro Bay and 24, whatever the math works. I'm not going to do math in public anymore. Whatever the math works out to add up to 100%.
And you probably have some required minimum payments they had to make, because if you have to go finance a new treatment plan on their behalf, just because their flows go down, you don't want them. You still want to make sure they're paying for their share.
Thank you.
Just a quick question. Twofold. One is, I was going to bring up, I think, for the board up here, and I heard it more from another committee I'm in, I think it's more the city's impetus to make Cayucas a customer. I'm not sure that's totally a bilateral kind of situation. I'm not sure. All I'm saying is I think this has been driven more by the city of Morro Bay to have them as a customer as opposed to a full-on partner. In looking at your new rate structure, I got to admit, just from a purely logical standpoint, the original tier structure you had makes more sense to me, because generally speaking, sewage is generated by the number of people in a unit. There are less people, generally speaking, in a multifamily or a condo unit than there is in a single-family home. For me, it's something easier to defend than the other aspect of trying to put charges based on the amount of water used, because when you start using more water in a home and there's less people in that home, actually the dilution rate of the sewage is at a lower level, and then it falls into one of those lesser strength kind of BOD levels coming out of that particular structure, and probably should get a reduced rate like you would do when you structured it out. For me to defend, I could defend the first line that you came up with as opposed to the second. Other than that, I have no issues or problems with how you're going about this.
I'm confused now on the non-residential. What were the rates going to be for those again?
Oh, we just took what was... Where was the... what was here, we put it into five classes.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I forgot to put the slide into this thing, in all honesty, because I ended up breaking up this residential stuff. But we had... this didn't change what was shown last time. There were like five groups. We had low strength, moderate strength, medium, high. And they would continue to pay a variable charge per unit with a minimum charge, but the minimum charge wouldn't necessarily be 51.77, that's higher than your residential rate. The minimum charge would be based on whatever the lowest residential rate is.
Okay.
So here would be, going up to 66.40. In this case, they'd pay the minimum charge they'd have to pay is, at the end of 5 years, 63.32. But it would be a usage charge on the commercial side, because
would have that fixed charge at the lowest amount plus how much they use of water.
They would just pay kind of similar to what they currently pay now. They pay a charge of, $463 per unit. That's
okay.
It. But they have to pay at least 51. So if they only use one unit, they still have to pay 51. So we weren't kind of changing that approach. That's actually a very common approach for commercial rates, is to have a usage-based rate. So, different restaurants, even though they might look the same, one might be open for three meals a day, 7 days a week, the other one only open for breakfast and 5 days a week. So they pay based on their actual flow.
Okay.
And they typically don't have a lot of outdoor use. We did make an allowance for some outdoor use in the the assumptions that we did to develop the rates. So they would pay, the residential customers would pay mostly fixed charges or all fixed charges. The commercial customers, it's all usage charges subject to a minimum.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
I can give you an example of one of a larger user. I won't use the name, but a large hotel establishment. Currently, this is what they're, in ballpark numbers, what the rate impact would be. Their average water use is about 500 units per month. They go from a combined water sewer bill about $10,000 to, after 5 years, a $15,000 per month combined water sewer bill.
Debbie?
I think Plan A is a little more straightforward. And when you get to factoring in the water rates that are variable based on usage, and then you get into the sewer rates, which has a variable factor to it, I think the bill gets a little confusing. So I'm all for A, because it seems just straightforward and very simple and easy for anybody to understand. You pay this much every month, and that's it.
I guess I have a question for you. With this new rate structure, how does that affect Ms. Morrison's question about her six units?
Good question. Currently, they pay $45.59 per unit. And I think that was the issue, is that, hey, wait a minute, they're paying such a low water bill, they only use a few units of water. Why do these six units together have to pay six times this charge, because there's only six people there? When there's a house next door, it has six people in it. So the flow. And the big picture, there's nothing perfect. You have to come up with a rate that you think is equitable, how it addresses it. They would still be paying per unit because they are separate dwelling units. You still need the pipelines to serve those dwelling units. Yeah. Yeah, they only have one water meter, so they're only paying one of the fixed charges on the water side. So they're paying a really low, that's to pay a water rate of $40 for six separate dwelling units. That's pretty good. So they have this huge disparity. I would almost suggest the disparity is because their water bills are so low. But they have one meter that serves them. If they were,
how many laterals are serving the property, I guess, would be my next question.
There's probably only one lateral. Oh. Our current rates charge per unit. We know how many units there are in multifamily properties, and we count the number of units, and they get charged per unit.
So they would still be paying for six units. Is that correct?
That is correct. Every dwelling unit would have its own separate
charge. But at
80%
of the residential rate.
That's correct.
I think her question is independent of what we're talking about today with the water and sewer rate study. It would tell you what each one is. I think you'd have to petition the city council to make a different determination on your part. It's beyond the purview of what we're doing, if you understand where I'm going with this. I'm sorry, I'm speaking to her right now. From that standpoint, I think that's where you'd have to petition, saying somehow you should be treated as a single-family residence as opposed to six individual units. Good luck. I don't know where that goes, because it'd probably bring into question half this town, where there is a lot of people renting out separate units, and it looks like one home, so to speak. And that's a very thorny issue, and it's probably more political than I'd wish to get involved in.
Yeah, the other question is this typical of sewer rates, that they are usually charged just per unit? Is that the normal way?
Yes, no matter where you stand, rates look unfair from everyone's perspective. But that is the most common sewer rate structure in California, is having fixed residential charges. Some agencies have reduced charge, not all, for different types of multifamily units. Sometimes they have apartments versus mobile homes versus condominiums versus who knows what. We weren't going to that length. We just had single family reduced for multifamily, and a smaller percentage have a variable component added in.
Okay.
So this is the most, this is right in line with what's what's commonly out there.
And do some also add the variable for water use?
Yes. Some have rates that are 100% variable. Paso Robles does. That's very rare. What's more common is an agency has got a fixed charge, like what we propose there for, you know, 75-80% of the bill and a little bit for variable on top of that. But probably two-thirds more have fixed residential, probably three-quarters have fixed residential sewer charges.
I guess the only thing that concerns me with the second alternative, too, is if people even save more water, are you going to be coming back saying, well, we're not generating enough revenue to cover our sewer charges? At least with the flat rate structure, you're getting the set amount you know in advance, as opposed to coming back and saying, gee, we're not selling as much water, therefore we're not collecting as much sewer because of the variable aspect in that.
That, I mean, that always could be a concern, but 80% of it's fixed.
Well,
so even if they went down 10%,
well,
10%
I'm just saying, I see
yeah.
that as another issue that yeah. comes up when you start playing the variable game based on water usage.
Thank you. Any other questions? Okay, we could.
Public comment.
Public comment, yes.
One more thing just to mention real quickly.
Okay.
This notion of the property tax roll stuff.
Oh, yes.
That's something I think we talked about initially. You know, you could put a portion of your charges on the property tax rolls, and that was just one idea that was, I think, in, you know, kind of discussed with staff earlier on. Due to the nature of, you know, having to fund a new treatment plant and the huge cost increases needed for that, that potentially, you know, for your residential customers, for example, you could take a portion of the charge and instead of billing it every month, collect it on the property tax rolls. Just as an alternative to try to keep the monthly bills down. There might be some administrative issues with it, but there are a lot of agencies out there that do collect sewer charges on the property tax rolls, not so much water. So we just threw that out there as an idea because we know there's the need for large rate increases on water and sewer, and maybe it makes the monthly bill look a little lower. Not the property tax bill, though. That would go up.
Does that require a vote of the people in order to do an assessment such as that?
Well, it's not. This wouldn't be an assessment. It would be just a method of billing collection.
Oh, okay.
Which is allowed on the sewer side. There's debate whether it's allowable to do this on the water side legally. The other thing is it would mean then a chunk of your money is only coming in a couple of times a year, but that could be set up in a way where you're, you know, coincides with your debt service payments would be after these chunks of money came in.
I'd like to ask Rob what he thinks of that idea.
Well, there's one community in this county that I know that does it. City of Atascadero collects 100% of their sewer charges on their property tax bill, and it's really which pocket do you want to take the money out of? Because we need to recover the same amount of cash no matter what. So whether you have a couple $100 biannual charge on your tax bill and a lower monthly sewer bill, I'm kind of ambivalent over it because it's at the end of the year, it's the same amount of money that needs to come from each user. So I have no strong feelings one way or the other.
The city would be collecting the money regularly, I assume.
Yes, they would.
You would be getting the money regularly.
Yeah, yes, we would be getting the money through the biannual tax subvention.
Even though it was,
yeah. And we get it whether the taxes are paid or not.
Yeah, that's the other thing. I think your county's on the teeter plan, so you're guaranteed 100% payment. You get the money typically in December and April, I believe it is. On the other side, you need more fund reserves because you're not getting this ongoing revenue stream. And you're already, some agencies do it because they don't mail water bills, so they just think, hey, we'll just do sewer only. We might as well just do it on the tax rolls twice a year. We could avoid all our billing costs, but you're already billing for water anyway. So it's just a, you know, almost like a policy preference.
And that's why Atascadero does it, because they don't, it's a mutual water company, it's a separate private water company, and the city does sewer, so there's no water bill that the city mails out.
Okay, thank you.
When we first brought the subject up, I'm right in the middle of doing my taxes. And so I thought that the whole purpose of bringing this option up to the citizens is because it is tax deductible.
Well,
or is it separated out from your property tax bill as not tax deductible?
It's listed separately on the property tax bill. Legally, it's not supposed to be deducted from taxes, but everybody does.
Okay.
So, yeah. there you go.
I'm in.
Just don't get caught.
Okay, I just thought it was more of a convenience issue for folks to just pay the bill once or twice a year than paying it every month. But some folks, maybe it works better the other way. You just don't know.
It's a shift. You know, it's a shift from the ratepayer who could be a renter onto the property tax roll, which could be someone, you know, elsewhere. It depends on how every rental agreement's different. So I don't know. That would be a change. And the only reason I brought up initially, it's just like, wow, you have to do all the stuff on your water side, and you have to build a new, you know, $75 million treatment plant. I didn't know what the feeling would be in terms of, hey, you got to make your bill go up to, you know, 45 to 80 something per month. I thought if there was more blowback, we can't do that. We'd rather bury it away in the tax roll somewhere or part of this charge so it doesn't hit people's monthly bills as much. They still got to pay it, as Rob pointed out, one way or other. So that's the only reason I brought it up, more for... Is there some...
Well, the other advantage is that you won't be late because you have to pay your taxes on time.
Yeah, and the county gives you the money. They go after the delinquencies
right. Separately.
So,
there you go.
Yeah.
They will shut your water off.
But you only get the money twice a year is the other thing.
Okay.
The other thing.
All right. Do you want us to make any recommendations on the next steps?
I would say first maybe open it up for the public,
okay.
And then bring
all
it back to the
all
board
all
for
right. Thank you.
Discussion.
Okay. Is there any, we'll open public comment, any more public comment on the sewer issue?
This is on the sewer issue. Okay. I recommend you go with alternative A, and also I recommend that we keep it billed to the city like we're doing it right now, the sewer and water together, because I think it's better to pay it monthly because it's kind of a shock when it comes to your tax bill. So I would recommend do it the way we do it now. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Anyone else?
You
want to state your name again and talk into the microphone.
Yeah. All right. I just felt, because we only have one meter. My name's Rose, and mm-hmm. owner of the 6 units, Doom Street. But mm-hmm. I could change it to 2 families, that apartments. So I just first we only have 1 meter. So you're talking about multi families. How you judge it is to charge if they only have 1 meter, you're gonna charge them 2 because they have granny units or they have individual room renting it out.
The question is like, so we have 1 meter, we have 6 units. Why isn't there 6 meters for the and that's where
the, for the charge this because we only have 1 meter. How you charge to charge 6 sewer bill?
That was that's the main kind of question we have.
Yeah, right. That's a Rob question.
Yeah,
or the family renting 4 rooms out. I know somebody renting 4 rooms individually.
But besides that,
it's paying 1 sewer bill.
But besides that, it should be, if it's 6 units, there should be 6 meters. So I know how much I'm paying for my water, and I'm fine with paying for the sewer because I own a business, and you were asking a question, if we pay higher, we pay higher than residential. So should we get 6 meters, and who do we contact to get 6 meters to get that?
Since the charging, been charging 6 sewer bill for many, many years.
Yes.
And many, many years, our water bill is only $38 or under $40, but we are paying almost $300 sewer bill.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So it is possible to convert to individual metered. units. It's not the least expensive thing to do because they all have to have separate plumbing and they cannot be internally connected. So it depends how the units were originally constructed, how easy that would be. Like Alex said, there's probably no perfect right or wrong way to charge for sewer. I suppose we could come up with another method that is charged per meter, but is that the fairest way when you're looking at single family? If it's a large apartment complex, let's say with 20 units in it, that they would only pay one sewer for 20 units. It's a kind of a balance that we're looking at here.
Well, I got to ask a question, Rob. Yeah, a lot of trailer parks in town have one master meter, and a lot of times they read their own, and then have separate private meters to each of the units within that trailer park, correct?
Correct.
So it sounds to me that's a similar situation. They just didn't include the separate private meters to read to each one of their units. And a lot of those trailer parks are on one sewer lateral that come out that serve maybe 15 trailers, so to speak.
And then we
charge
would
each trailer.
We would charge each trailer a sewer.
That's the problem I see with your argument, ma'am. And so from that standpoint, it's beyond the purview of this particular committee and even what we're speaking to today, because we're speaking about the sewer and water rate structure for each unit, not necessarily your particular predicament. And the only way I'd know how to handle that would be to go and try to get respite from the city council per se. However, I do want to make clear there's other people operating in a similar manner to you, trailer parks being one of them here in town, where they are on maybe one master meter and they are on one sewer lateral serving that whole unit set. So I just want to throw that out there as you go forward. Thank you.
And that I think there are certain built-in, maybe not inequities, but for example, a single-family home might have 11 people in the house, whether or not they rent out the rooms individually. Yet the apartments they describe may have 6 people in there. Yet the single-family home would pay for one sewer and one water. I'm not sure that there is a way to make this perfect.
I think it's worth pointing out to them that actually the one meter, they're saving money by having the one meter.
Because
they're going to have, you'll end up with 6 separate flat rates that are going to add up to more than what that one meter is costing you.
Okay. Is there any more public comment? Okay, we'll close public comment. Do we want to make a recommendation, folks?
Well, I was just going to throw out there real quick my personal feelings. I feel comfortable with what we've been shown tonight. I do tend to agree with the flat rate structure for several reasons I have already enumerated. Anybody else have any feelings?
I agree the flat rate's probably the best way to go as well.
Well, then I'll go ahead and make a motion for the sewer rate structure as presented tonight with the original structure, which was the flat rate fee for both the single family and condo, and then the variable for the commercial aspects of it.
And that includes the reduced cost for the 80% of single family from multifamily.
As presented,
okay.
with the fees that we saw. Second.
Is there a second?
I'll second that.
All right.
All in favor?
All in favor?
Aye.
Do you want to talk about the next
steps? So the next steps is we'll be taking this to a city council workshop next Tuesday, the 24th, starting at 4:30 in this room.
Okay.
So we'll be presenting this board's recommendations along with Alex's presentation, and City Council will chew on it there, and
okay.
We'll Alex has the dates up here, looking at in May to go back for a public hearing to set the rates and, March initiate the Prop 218 process, May set the rate hearing, and then rates would become effective July 1.
Okay.
Is the proposal.
And I noticed that you had some recommendations about the 218 process, which were included in our report. Did you want us to make a recommendation on those?
Sure. I'm happy to take any input.
Well, you were very generous about the process, and it made sense to me, okay. So I would support it.
Okay.
No, this is for he made recommendations about the
counting the mailouts,
mailing out to everyone.
And we will confer with your attorney as well to make sure they're comfortable with the process. I mean, they're the one who has to be comfortable at the end of the day.
Yeah, you said that you don't necessarily have to send it to everyone, but you would recommend doing that.
Generally, yeah. I mean, you don't want to be accused of, you know, trying to sneak it through or something like that. But also, the other thing I always say is at the public hearing, sometimes people come up and protest or they write something down and it doesn't meet the required legal standard. But you don't want to say, sorry, you didn't, you know, put the right X over here. You generally want to be, okay, we'll count your protest, unless you're really at the 50% threshold and really need to get a rate increase. But, yeah.
Okay, well. Thank you. I think we all agree that it made sense.
Yeah.
And just, you don't inflate the denominator that way when you mail out to both the resident and I know
and
some agencies think that that's what happens is you reduce the odds of having a 50% protest by mailing it out, but you only get to charge or get to count one vote per billing address. I believe that's the case.
Per parcel.
Per parcel.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks, Alex.
We have a new business. And Rob's going to tell us what it is.
Yes, let me get to that item. What we have tonight is review of a stop sign request based on petition at the intersection of Main and Pacific Streets. And
I just want to say thank you all for your, you know, there's a lot of stuff we wade through last time, then, you know, this time again. And I thought you guys had a lot of great input and appreciate everybody had a lot of thoughtful comments and stuff.
Well,
so
thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Traffic control devices are regulated by several different regulations. Some of the board has been through this discussion before on other intersections, but we look at our city regulations, Chapter 10 of our Muni Code, the California Vehicle Code, and we use the California Manual on Uniform Traffic Control Devices. In general, any traffic control device needs to be warranted or justified before it can be installed, and an engineering analysis is used to determine whether that is justified. The city's code allows the city council to install a traffic control device, whether or not it is justified or not. They have that discretional authority to do such. We also recently, council passed a petition program where in local residential streets, if there's a majority of the neighborhood that would like a traffic control device, typically a stop sign, they would petition the city. If there's more than 50% that would like that, and it's not warranted, the city would install it and they would pay for all the installation costs of that. This specific request is not on a local residential street. It is on the intersection of Main and Pacific, one of the city's two arterial streets, Main Street, the other being South Bay Boulevard, and a collector street, Pacific Street. So it doesn't meet the petition requirements. Back on Valentine's Day in 2012, I stamped a report that did a traffic engineering traffic study on this intersection, and I guess fortunately or unfortunately, depending on your perspective, it did not meet the warrants. I mean, there's not the traffic volumes there. There's not the pedestrian volumes there that the manual that would require the installation of a four-way stop sign. And thankfully, there's not the accident history there. MUTCD guidelines or requirements for the number of accidents is 5 in a given year that are due to the intersection configuration as the cause of the accidents. We did look at accident history, and since that report, there have been 5 accidents there since 2012, and 3 of them being in 2014, but yet it still does not meet the required warrants or the justification for installing a stop sign there. We have looked at speeds there along Main Street, thinking that might be an issue. The average speed along Main Street is 24 miles an hour at that location. So we're coming into the Central Business District, which is 25 miles an hour. Didn't seem to be excessive speeding was an issue there. Based on our engineering analysis, staff does not recommend installation of a four-way stop, which would be installing stop signs on Main Street at Pacific. And that concludes my report.
Okay, thank you. Any questions? We'll start down here. Debbie?
I drive that every day, going down to the Embarcadero. And I read the report, and I agree that there really isn't a site problem so much, but I don't understand why the stops sign banners before the word stop, you know, there's a white bar there and then the word stop behind it, is set so far back from the street, because you get parked cars along there, and I have to stick my nose practically out into the middle of the lane so I can see far enough down for oncoming traffic. And I think that's probably part of the problem, is you stop at the stop sign, and then you're kind of inching out till you can see so you can go.
And that typically is the way we drive in California, is you stop at the stop bar, and you don't have to immediately hit the accelerator and go from the stop bar. You are protected by those parked cars. Typically, folks don't run through parked cars, so you are to proceed forward. And the reason it is set so far back is so we make provisions for pedestrians crossing Pacific at Main there. So we need to set it back behind where the sidewalk is. So you would stop, make sure there's no pedestrians, and then kind of creep forward like you do. That's exactly the way.
But you do get honked at, and you do get people that actually stop because they think that you're going to go all the way out into the intersection, that you are in their way. It's just my viewpoint.
Yes. I probably experienced that too.
Jan?
This study that we have was done in 2012, right?
Correct.
And you said you needed 480 vehicles an hour to be considered, and 2 years ago you had as many as 425 on one date. You don't think it's necessary to make another one? I know that the pedestrian traffic hasn't increased, and I was just wondering, even if the, are you sure they're still only going 24 miles an hour on that part of the road?
Typically, traffic studies are every 5 years.
Okay.
They're valid for. I haven't, anecdotally, haven't noticed a substantial increase in traffic.
The main
there.
Thing is just the crossing the street or making a left turn there, I think. But, okay.
Yes, first of all, being an engineer, I believe in warrants. I really do. I think they have to be met in order to throw stop signs in at any given location. And what I've noticed down there, though, and I kind of got the feeling a little bit from your petition, wasn't so much even to stop the cars at that intersection, but because of trying to cross the street, not across Pacific, but across Maine. Now, I think it does still require warrants in California to put in crosswalks at uncontrolled intersections, but you did it at both Dune and Surf. And I paint's cheap, and I think if it could be, if the warrants are there for crosswalks across at that location, it may make sense. The problem I have with stop signs along Main is you could be behind four cars. You pull up to the next, you're behind four cars. You pull up to the next stop sign, you're behind four cars. If there's only one or two stop signs on Main, you're only sitting through four cars once or twice. I'm not pushing. Like I said, I'm an engineer, so I only think in logic. But I've been down there before trying to cross Main Street, and you feel a little bit like that video game Frogger where you're trying to get across when you do have people coming up and down Main Street. I would suggest maybe trying to look at whether there could be crosswalks put in place at Pacific, similar, because if you go to the north side of Morro Bay Boulevard, every cross street has crosswalks across it. Some of them have stop signs to go with it. Harbor, I think, has a stop sign. Beach, maybe. I can't remember the other one. There's several stop signs north of Morro Bay Boulevard, and they have the crosswalks. But they also have it at Dune and Surf is a three-way intersection there.
And I think that crosswalk is actually mid-block.
No, it actually crosses Surf on the, I'll call it the east side of the street. You're at the intersection. It's a T-intersection is how it operates. And to me, you may alleviate some of these people on your petition's concern if you could take a look at seeing would it warrant crosswalks at that location. The feeling I got was they were kind of concerned more of the pedestrian than they were truly the cars having to come to a stop. Because every time you do throw in a stop sign, especially on a major arterial, it's like, okay, let's hit the next one and wait with the three other people ahead of you. And I don't know, I find that personally irksome myself. And I do travel down Pacific. It's one of the ways I go down because there's very few stop signs from Piney Way down to Main Street itself. So that's something you might be able to look at if you can't make the warrant. Because the other solution is purely political. They take it to the city council. City council can make that determination. But for me, I kind of stick with the warrants, and I do agree with Rob on that. And I think I actually sat on the committee when this came up in 2012, so I'm a little bit familiar with this from the last time around. That's all I got.
David?
I would agree with Stephen in that rather than look at this as a vehicular problem for crossing Main Street, more of a pedestrian problem, and rather than a stop sign, maybe we could recommend a crosswalk instead.
I'm also leaning more towards the crosswalk, but with the suggestion that possibly the crosswalk only be on the north side of the intersection. If there is speeding happening, it's most likely coming from the state park side because you've just left a stop sign on the other side, and it's making the turns onto Pacific in either direction. So in that case, if someone's crossing, if they're following the rules, maybe there's a sign, no crossing on the one side, but if they're following the rules, they'll be outside of that danger zone. And the other issue that you, because otherwise if you also throw a crosswalk right there, you're going to have the issue of people stopping there just because they know their stop sign's coming and they're assuming that's an intersection to stop at like they do at Dunes. So I would suggest maybe a crosswalk just on the north side of the intersection to alleviate keeping people out of the danger zone.
I think that's a good point because you also do have a crosswalk where they could cross Pacific on the east side and then cross over, and you could do it in two legs to get across the street.
Stu?
I actually spent about an hour out there yesterday park watching traffic, and I talked to a couple of the residents out there about what was going on and what their views were and what their thoughts were. I saw several Hollywood stops, and it happens there. And I understand that there was an altercation with a bicycle or something like that recently there. I don't know if there's, maybe the bike was going the wrong way or something, but there is an issue there with that street is easier to go up than Morro Bay Boulevard, of course, because it doesn't have as many stop signs. But what I could see happening is maybe a larger sign that says cross traffic does not stop. Get it up there on it and get it on both of the stop signs. The crosswalk on the east side, that's east, isn't all the way through. It's just some white stripes that got paved over. So, you know, there was a comment about where is it and where do you stop? And that goes on right there. The other side of the street's fine. So if we get that stripe, I don't know about the bicycle lane striping. If there's a plan to do any of that there, and maybe put a cute little bicycle on one of the lanes there, and so on. And thirdly, there was a comment about a traffic cam there to see who's doing what. You know, spy on our people driving in town. And maybe get the police out there once in a while and write a ticket. I understand that there aren't any tickets written on that corner unless there's an accident happening. That's what I have.
I don't have any questions. I did notice that the people that signed the petition, a lot of them didn't live anywhere near that intersection. In fact, there were some people from Los Osos who signed it. So I think we need to really look at that petition quite carefully. Any members of the public wish to comment? Please come forward. Yep. State your name.
My name is Cruz Reyes, and I live on the corner of Pacific and Main, and that was a very good observation. And I think that if the people from Los Osos came in to see the doctor at the doctor's office and they had the exposure, that I think that qualifies them if they can't get across the street. So I think that that's probably why you do see people that are coming in from Dr. Taylor, and there's another dentist on the other side, and all the doctor's offices. They all signed this petition. And the hotel signed the petition, so you have 160 people. And I think your comments are really, really correct about everything that you say and putting, but the one thing that you're eliminating is you're eliminating the traffic, and the people are not considered enough or patient enough. And this morning I helped this one. He says, Mr. Gonzalez, who lives down two blocks from me, safety for my kids. He stood out there with his baby and his little girl, and on the other side, on the east side of Pacific, trying to cross, no stop signs. And one comment that you didn't realize is that the traffic that comes in from San Luis Obispo travels at a high rate of speed, and there's nothing that's going to stop them. They're coming in at 40, 45 miles an hour. If there isn't a car that's making a left turn on Pacific going up the hill, then they're going to continue on and make that left down onto the Embarcadero, and I almost got killed that way. If you're down 25 yards off the intersection, I have parked my van and my white vehicle. I stepped out 2 feet out, and he almost got me. And that almost happened to a young lady at the doctor's office. So what happens is they come down from San Luis Obispo.
I think you need to speak into the microphone.
Yeah. They come down from San Luis Obispo at a high rate of speed, and if there's nothing to stop them, then they're going to make that left, and they're pulling in about 25 miles an hour. And they don't. If they stopped, they would have to look to the left and see if the intersection is clear. So his interpretation of back in 1920s is fine, but they don't travel that way. By the time they hit that intersection, they're doing close to 40. The contractors going out of town, you have the people from the Embarcadero, the truck traffic, and on the event days, God help us. I mean, you have so much traffic there. I don't know when he put his strips up, but I'm telling you, and he didn't count for the accidents that wind up on my lot because they didn't report it. So you really, really have to reassess this situation. And it's important that two stop signs are put. And these people are willing to get a petition to put it on the ballot. And I'm talking about doctors, lawyers, an accountant, all the hotels. And they asked me, you go up there, tell them what we've talked about. And I think that if we need to put it on the ballot, then we'll go for it.
Just so I'm clear, is your concern more from the pedestrian standpoint or the vehicle standpoint?
It's really pedestrians and really both, because what happens is you can't slow these vehicles down. I run down to the park every morning. I'm a pilot, 10,000-hour pilot. Okay. And maybe my concern for safety is a little bit, I would say, a higher bar. And I think that I talked to the rangers down there, and you cannot get those vehicles. Once they hit Pacific, they're full bore right on down and around into the park. And 25, we have no traffic control in this town, and that's it right there.
Well, the two problems that run into, both for Rob and for me personally, is the fact with a warrant, you can't use it to try and slow down traffic.
I can't give them tickets.
Well, I'm just saying, the state of California, when they set up these warrants.
And I see him drive through, and they're honking, and I have a friend. What really got me going on this thing is I have a friend by the name of Gunther, and he couldn't cross the streets, and he's in his late 60s, and he has his two dogs, and he fell. He broke his arm and trying to cross the street, and I ran across the street and I grabbed him and I said, Gunther, and I stopped traffic, and they do not stop. They're in a lot of I'm out of Washington State, and drivers are drivers, and boy, if they're set to go somewhere, it's pedal to the metal and they don't care. It might be 25 at right out of town, but where you do have a four way stop sign. And I spoke to this attorney. He says, you know, they're not really consistent about, and he signed the petition, he says, they're not consistent about, you got one stop up here on Pacific, and the other one down here, you have no crosswalks, and you put in a 10-foot sidewalk right next to my house, so all these people can go down to the Embarcadero, and on an event day, which is just about every weekend now, you have tons, women, babies, strollers, coming down across, and people will not stop either way. So, especially coming into town, unless you have somebody standing out there with a red flag, thinking there might be a bull or something.
Well, if I could stop you for a sec, that's one of the reasons why I was trying to push for the crosswalk aspect of this, because they do have to respect the crosswalk, which you don't have right now. I agree with you.
My
it's tough walking.
I think we need to arguing with our
I'm sorry. I don't mean to be argumentative.
My interpretation of that is that they don't see it. And you need to have something to stop them, because if they don't, we get all the truck traffic, all the boat traffic, and they don't stop the boats. Yeah. The boats wait forever to try to get across. Yeah, they'll get aggro.
I think we've exceeded the 3-minute limit.
Okay, I'll stop.
Is the message we're getting here? Thank you.
But in any event, I'll just finish with this. There's 160 people here that live in and around. And they say they'd like to have a stop sign both ways. And if they're prepared to go to the ballot, and I think that this is, if you don't want to do it, then I'll go out and we'll get it on the ballot.
Yeah. So. Well, we're just going to make a recommendation to the city council.
I appreciate your time, I hope I get excited about that, because I've seen enough accidents, and I almost got killed myself. One of the doctor's patients going across the street. And I think I think we got to do something. I thought to myself, if we save one life, we've done our job. God bless you.
Thank you. Is there any more public comment on this issue? Okay, hearing none, we'll close public comment.
I just want to say I don't think this is our decision. I think that the state has made these warrants, and this doesn't comply with those warrants. I know they can go to the city council, and the city council can take it up directly and say, yeah, we'll put the money in, and we'll make it a stop sign there. But as it stands, as it's delivered to us, our hands are tied.
Well, we can make a recommendation to the city council.
That's true. You aren't tied to the same things that we are as staff. You can make any recommendation that you so desire to the city council, and we'll bring that forward to the city council for them to consider along with the technical issues. So don't feel that you can't express your the body's opinion just because staff says it doesn't meet warrants. So I would appreciate any comments that you might have.
Okay.
Rob, at a previous meetings you mentioned other devices being installed. Possibly there's grants for like the speed limit signs or the flashing speed limit signs, things like that. Is there any of that available that could assist?
Office of Traffic Safety, we could apply for grants for that. For the speed limit signs, also, you know, this amongst probably a few other intersections, we would want to evaluate for other things. I think what we really need to do is before we would install, like, say, in-ground pavement lighting for a crosswalk, we would want to know that is there enough pedestrians that actually cross that intersection to make that, a good choice. Like Steve said, paint's cheap. That would be probably the simplest thing to do would be to stripe crosswalks. Although, do you face the issue that that I've experienced also at Dunes? There's the assumption that there are stop signs there because they see the white marks. I will say that most of the stop signs in the downtown are unwarranted. They were installed by council resolution. That's why there is not consistency to the where they are placed in the downtown.
I'll say this too. Stop signs do create traffic congestion. They create pollution. They create tempers because somebody isn't moving, and things like that happen. Some of these events, I purposely stay away from that intersection in downtown because when the events are going, traffic is quite backed up anyway. So if we throw another stop sign in there, what's that going to do for it? I think it becomes an issue of educating the public that is an intersection there and be careful and come up with some sort of means, a sign or something flashing and so on to educate them about watch out.
Okay, I hadn't thought about stop signs a crosswalk until Steve mentioned it. And then you said, Rob, that sometimes the crosswalk is an assumption that there's a stop sign there. So why don't we start there? There's a stop sign already on Pacific, right? Both directions on Pacific. So if we just paint is cheap, I just heard that somewhere tonight, and we just paint the crosswalks across Main and redo the one on Pacific and just see if that has an impact. Can we start? That would be my recommendation to start from there.
I was just going to follow up on what Jan said. Is when you go down by the post office and there's a stop sign on every corner except for that one street, and I'm sorry, I can't recall, Napa, is it Napa? And people stop there because they're used to stopping every block at a stop sign, and then somebody comes right up their trunk because they're thinking, you aren't, what are you stopping here for? There's no stop sign. But you get in the habit of seeing a crosswalk and you want to stop. And that produces accidents, too.
Mm-hmm. So are you willing to make a recommendation? Or Steve, do you agree with it?
I guess my recommendation would be to go along with staff report that it's not warranted. However, I think the city should take a look because they have to provide warrants, I think, to also provide a crosswalk at that location. Is that not correct?
Well, there would have to be the pedestrian traffic to really justify it. And in California.
I'm not that familiar with the warrants needed, but I know
we
it's.
We have a lot of pedestrian traffic coming through for the event day, so you put a crosswalk. I know. I'm sorry. I just wanted to interject that.
We We all know in California that whether a crosswalk or mark is marked or not at an intersection, there is a crosswalk there, and the presumption is the pedestrian has the right of way. Now, I don't recommend, my rule of thumb is right of way, you can only give right of way. You can never take right of way. Because the minute you take right of way, is you're going to be in an accident. Is my experience, my experience on a bicycle anyway. I knew that I had the right of way, and I took it, and ended up in the emergency because of it. So my view is, you cannot take right of way; you can only give it.
Okay.
You had mentioned traffic studies happen every 5 years. Now, are those all across town, or is there, like, what would it cost to do a traffic study at this specific intersection?
To repeat the intersection analysis?
Yeah.
It's staff time. We have the equipment to do it. It takes, several hours of staff time to go out, set the counter, move the counter, probably about, I think I have a number in the staff report, maybe $1,000, $10,000. Yeah, for a professional traffic study. For us to do the intersection analysis, staff-wise, it's about $1,000 for a consultant to do it. We did Radcliffe in Maine, about $10,000 to do that. A little bit more in-depth traffic study than here, but...
I would almost be inclined to suggest maybe the sidewalk on the one side, because we're just making a recommendation to council.
Right.
We recommend put in the sidewalk. Put in the crosswalks, and at the same time suggest an updated traffic study.
I could support that.
Because some of those numbers were close, and if things come back different, if we're getting a lot more tourists in than we did in 2012, maybe it is warranted today and it wasn't 3 years ago.
Yeah. And maybe we do the traffic study in the summertime versus February.
Yes, good
Chris,
idea.
Chris, if you want to go ahead and make your motion.
Make the motion.
I make the motion that we'll see if how you want to. If we...
support the staff report.
To support the staff report and to add crosswalks or update the crosswalks on both sides of Pacific and Maine, but maybe only on the north side
of Maine.
On the main cross. And also to recommend a updated staff report.
I'll second that.
Not staff report, updated
traffic
study.
In-house traffic report, not a consultant.
I'll second that.
All right, all in favor?
Aye.
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 Okay.
I want to thank you very much. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome.
And any step forward is, God bless you. And thank you for coming.
Yeah. I want to thank everybody for lasting this long. we've done it again, I think.
Yes.
Another record. So we are adjourned, and our next meeting is Thursday, April 16th at 6 o'clock here.
Thank you.
Good night, everybody.
Thanks.
Comments in there.
They were kind of innocuous, like I don't know what himself or self or themselves in the name of it. We don't know who you are really. We don't know how you hold the properties.
Re-inquire into my name.
Both hands. I heard it was either Danny or some other. So I
She thought it was a challenge.